Hello and welcome to episode 165 of the Film Yak Podcast. I'm John.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm JR.
And this time around, we're talking JR's pick, Wagon Master, directed by John Ford from 1950. Another Western. Hell yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Not one of my picks, though. Normally, I pick the Westerns, I feel like, but, you know, it's JR this time. We're also going to talk other stuff we watched. How's it going?
It's been an interesting week. I had to replace the door, the lock actuator on one of the doors of my car. And I've also been getting over something. Cold or the crud.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-oh. We don't like that. We don't like crud. Mm. Or actuators, which is a funny word.
Yeah, it's the thing that actually like makes your door lock and unlock. And it was going so haywire that it drained the battery overnight. So
the actuator.
That was,
oh my god.
Yeah,
makes
so that was
lock
fun.
Actual.
Yes.
Makes
this
it
is
actuate.
Not a lock. This yeah. is not a lock until there's an actuator there to make it real.
That's right.
All right. JR, any actuator business in your life? Or?
Nah, dude. My paternity leave started this past week.
You
paternity
best.
Leave. Yeah, paternity leave. So I've just been...
You are the pater?
Been hanging out with a baby. You know, throwing on some shows and movies. And just chilling. It's been great.
Nice.
John's yelling at somebody right now.
No, I realized my the window unit in my room is on. I'm gonna turn it off. It's probably making a lot of noise. So Amelia's going to turn it off for me.
Mm.
This is the joy of having a child. Thank you.
Do this, minion.
Exactly. all right. Well, I'm good too. I think the
we didn't ask.
Homecoming dances tonight for my school, and I'm not there. So you know.
Hey.
It's good. Feeling good about that.
That's incredible. Is that like a? I previously made plans. I can't show up to the dance.
I actually volunteered to do it. I usually do, because I have there are coworkers I work with who I like, and we're always doing like we sell water at the concession stand to the kids,
they
which
don't
is
have free water.
No, dollar a bottle, bud. Dollar a bottle. And they can't have anything else. And it's really frustrating to them, too, because, like, behind us, there's, like, all these coolers filled to the brim with soda, and they can't have any of that.
They're just for you guys?
No, they're not for... They're for the games, whatever they have a game. They
oh,
sell
okay.
to people.
Okay.
Wow.
But, I mean, they do bring in, like, special stuff for us on that night, usually. But this year, they've changed everything, so now they're paying us to be there. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great, because I'll get paid, finally, to do this. And then... I volunteered, and they were like, we want you watching the bathrooms. And I was like, no thanks. So I told them I had a podcast to record, you know? Got stuff to do.
Man.
And, anyway, yeah, never again. I'm done.
I got stuck on the bathroom duty, kind of like accidentally, on the last 8th grade dance. We have one per year.
It's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's an absolute nightmare. I was like, that's where the kids like vape and go to fuck each other and stuff. Like, I don't want to be anywhere near that activity. Like, I don't want there to be any sort of like. I'm the only guy who's over there too. There's like three women, but there's me and three women, and I'm just like, well, that's going to be great. So I'm the only guy on the guy's bathroom, but they got three girls on the girl's bathroom. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
Give me a break, you know. And I'm not a disciplinarian. That's not, you know, I'm not good at yelling at kids.
Mm.
Just not good at it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's just get into it, man.
Yeah.
I'm ready to talk some Wagon Master.
Yeah.
I got Ben Johnson on the brain. Let's do it. This is JR's pick, a John Ford Western, finally. We haven't talked a John Ford Western before on this show.
Mm.
I mean, officially. This one stars Ben Johnson, Harry Carey Jr., Ward Bond, Joanne Drew, some other people. James Arness, which is really weird to see him in this. Do you guys know James Arness?
I don't think so.
No, but he's like the son that doesn't talk, right?
He's
one of the creepy guys.
Doesn't he have a line? I thought he had a line. But yeah, he's Floyd. Floyd Clegg. And he's the star of Gunsmoke, like the main character in Gunsmoke for like 20 seasons. So I was just like, that's the only thing I know him from is that he's in Gunsmoke. Mm. And I only know that because my dad watches Gunsmoke every day, all day.
Right.
So. Seems like a few of these people became like TV Western stars.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, definitely. I'm sure if they weren't stars of the Western show on TV, I'm sure they were all guest stars at one time or another.
Well, I read like this was what like this movie was the reason we got Wagon Train, and somebody was in this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it was
Ward Bond.
Oh, the elder with the mustache. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was on that show until he died.
Oh, wow.
And it continued on for like 5 more years.
What a life!
I find that funny. But yeah, I'm just gonna do this Western Wagon thing.
Yeah. Until I'm dead. Hey, why not, you know?
All right. So, JR, why Wagon Master?
You know, it's one of, like, the lesser seen John Ford. You know, I don't even know. I want to say, like, masterpieces, but I don't know if this is even considered on that level. This is certainly beloved by a certain type of cinephile that loves John Ford. But this is not on that level of like Stagecoach or The Searchers or any of the other, you know, 12 like more popular John Ford movies. So I find that fascinating. I also love that this is 85 minutes and this is a Western that had, you know, really worked for me the last time I saw it. And I wanted to revisit it kind of assuming that, you know, I would just be like caught up. I was just caught up in the John Ford thing the first time I watched it. Kind of feel like every John Ford, I need to give another go, because I really like him and I love a lot of his movies, but I know you know like my disease of just loving classic films from famous directors. It's like, do I really like them or have I just been told to like them?
I don't. You don't have that. You have that.
Do I not? I don't know. Feels like sometimes I do.
I feel like you've given like low ratings to, like, you know, like a Fritz Lang movie here and there, or
certainly. I gotta make it appear as though I'm honest on Letterboxd.
You know? Really, you want to give Scarlet Street a 5 out of 5, but on Letterboxd, yeah. Who knows? You might have given it a 4. I don't even know, 4.5. I don't know. Anyways, okay. Well,
there's like Woman in the Window, or it's not Woman in the Window. One of those Fritz Lang movies from that period, I do not like, and one of them I really do, and I never remember which is which. Anyway, doesn't matter. Wagon Master is, I don't know, I find this to be, it's like both a plain and simple setup, but I really like it. It's these two horse traders kind of come into to town, looking to trade horses, sell their horses, and just kind of make a buck and go home. But they meet these Mormons, an elder, an Abe Lincoln-looking guy, and a pretty girl. And is that not fair, the Abe Lincoln guy?
Oh, no. I'm looking at something else. I'm sorry. Who looks like Abe Lincoln? Oh, the other guy for elder, the older guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one who's always admonishing the dude
for cursing.
Yeah.
It's like Perkins or something.
Yeah.
But he... anyway, they get to talking. They want to buy the horses. They're offended by the price of the horses, but Elder and the group kind of get this idea that they could use these two horse traders who are familiar with the area to help guide them and their wagon train through a tricky stretch of desert to get to the San Juan Valley, which I assume, like considering where the river goes from the San Juan Mountains, is in Utah, and also they're Mormon, so probably Utah. And I like this setup because there are a lot of pieces of it that aren't super common to a Western. Like, I mean, every part of it is common to a Western, but the specific way it plays out is not. Like, Ben Johnson and Harry Carey Jr., the two horse traders, are not sort of like the rough and tumble, like, sort of like anti-hero, maybe like dark past guys that we get in a lot of the Westerns that we watch. These are like two guys that just seem nice and friendly, and they like play pranks on people, and they gamble, and they, but they're like, I don't know, they're not trying to like grift anyone. They're not like, they're not looking for a huge payday from these Mormons. And they initially say no to the Mormons. But as they kind of watch them leave town, they have a change of heart, and that change of heart is given to us through song, which is, we're going to come back to the songs, because as soon as the song started, I was like, I'm fucked. I am fucked with these dudes. But yeah, and also this this movie, we have, before all that happens, before the credits roll at the beginning of a movie from 1950, we see a robbery in action, so we know that there is a gang out there in the desert as well. And that is notable, that because like that sort of like cold open, like this thing before the credits, was not common. And it was almost like jarring the way it just happened so quickly.
And the way that it's shot, like every time the gang shows up, it's like shot in tableau. Like there's people just standing and staring.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like no dialogue, and the way that that opens up is like that. And whenever they show up later, it's like they literally cut to every single person on both sides just staring at them, which I thought was great.
It's an interesting way to establish the menace of those of the Clegg or Clegg's gang. Yeah, so that is our basic setup. They're gonna run into those people doing the Oochie Coochie show that includes Joanne Drew and get into some shenanigans. But, you know, this is a, it's like a pretty easy going Western. And that's just like, that has not been our vibe when we watch Westerns at all. Like this movie, like it stops these Mormons, when they're camping and they have supplies, like when they do with the water, they break camp and they dance. You know, there's song and dance. They do that when they meet the Navajo. And for an 85-minute movie, it is interesting that we're going to devote, like, 9 of those minutes to groups dancing. So, 1, what did you guys think of this movie? And 2, were you able to tolerate the singing and dancing?
I will say, as soon as I saw Sons of the Pioneers, I was like, oh, that's the same group that opens up The Big Lebowski.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wheeze, come tumbling down.
You know?
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, I liked that aspect of it, and I thought it was interesting how, like, you know, like, when you first, like, when the movie first starts and as they're going, like, there's a lot of songs, but then, like, as things start to get more serious, there's less songs. So, but,
that's
a
good point. That's good.
Yeah. And yeah, like to JR's point, like I like the fact that, you know, like normally in a Western, like Ben Johnson's character would be, you know, he would be like, Quigley, you know, like, I never said I couldn't use a pistol. I just said I never had much use for one, you know, when he's like a dead shot,
right.
You know, like. Oh no, I don't like guns, you know, but then like, you know, oh, I'm going to shoot every one of you like between the eyes with no apparent effort. But I like the fact that like, you know, they're scrambling and like not able, like, you know, he's just kind of blazing, and it's really just by like blind luck that he's able to do that.
The violence in this movie when it happens is, it's like, it's very quick.
And
messy. And I think part of that is because it's a surprise to people when it does happen, but yeah. Also not like,
you find the final shootout surprising?
No, like, it's surprising to the characters. Like, they were not planning to have a shootout.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Mm. It is not surprising to us at all.
Right.
However, yeah. I mean, we don't have to start it, like, you know, jump to the end.
Let's start right at the very end of the movie.
there is stuff at the end that is also interesting.
So, like, yeah, like, them being nice guys, I agree they seem nice, except for, yeah, like, I did not understand the whistling to make the horse start, like, jumping around and, like, almost kill the guy at the beginning. He's like, and that's the marshal. And I'm like, what's this guy's problem? Immediately, I was like, what is Ben Johnson's problem? And I'm like, is this supposed to just be comedic for, like, the audience of the time? Is just like, oh, it's so funny. What a whippersnapper, scamper kind of guy. But then I realize, you don't realize until, like, you know, third act why that's in there. It's in there right. to set up that he's able to do that, right?
Which is clunky. And
yes.
It is fascinating because this marshal / sheriff, because they call him both, which I've got a note about what is he. Well, it's like, you know, in most movies, you do that to the marshal, like, well, you're getting shot or kicked out of town or put in jail. And this guy just, like, gets up off the horse.
Right, yeah.
It's like, he didn't even ask for, like, his $10 back.
Right.
And I kind of assumed that off-screen, he was not having that horse anymore.
It's
like,
yeah,
all it takes is a whistle to, like, have the horse be a rodeo horse. No thanks. What is that?
He obviously has no idea she's been doing a whole song and dance number behind his back.
She must have unplugged the headphones.
Yeah, or they, like, I don't... Maybe they're Bluetooth and they got disconnected.
Yeah, she didn't have them on. What's the deal with, like, a horse for $10? I'm a little confused about how, like, horse costs of the Old West, because, okay, in Back to the Future 3, I distinctly remember Biff says, you owe me $75 for the horse, right? $5 for the whiskey, $75 for the horse. And I'm like, okay, that's like my gauge for how much a horse would cost in the Old West. And maybe that's horribly incorrect.
It feels like a bad gauge. Like, just a weird source for the gauge.
$75 seems like a reasonable amount of money for, like, a vehicle in, you know, 150 years ago. Like, because, like, you know what cars cost in, like, the 1950s were, like, you know, $2,000 for, like, a brand new vehicle. You know what I mean? So it's like, it makes sense, like, if you extrapolate backward. Like, it doesn't make sense that they would be $10 for a horse. Like, that sounds insane to me. And then it's like, okay, but the horse is jumping and everything. And I'm like, okay, is that the reason he's selling it so cheap? And then he sells the other ones for $50. And I'm like, okay, that sounds more reasonable. But then the other guy's like, Ward Bond's like, $50 a horse is insane. Like, he's acting like that's a crazy price.
And on the way into town, the conversation is that they're going to sell the horses for $30.
No, he says, so, like, they got 30 horses and they're going to sell them for, like, $12 a piece.
Wasn't it? Sense?
I think so.
I don't remember any of that. All I remember is 10 and 50.
It's either they have 30 horses and they're selling them for $12, or they have 12 horses and they're selling them for $30, because he's trying to do the math.
All right, because he gets the 360.
But Ward Bond agrees to 50 a head, right? 50 a horse?
He does.
Yeah.
But I was so confused about, like, how much a horse is supposed to cost at this time.
Yeah, he's a horse trader. I'm guessing the 50 was presented as a way to, like, start. We're going to start negotiation here.
Yeah.
And negotiate down. But, you know, those Mormons are not great at commerce.
Okay, get this. It's according to Google, this is Quora.com.
Hold on. Okay.
In the West, U.S., it was possible to buy a horse for as little as $10, but a decent riding equine cost around $150.
Okay.
Source, 1950s wagon master.
No, it's Quora. I don't know where they got the information. This guy's a freelance historian who says this.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Who knows? Some guy, you know, he read a book once.
But it probably is, like, depends on the year. It depends on region.
And he said, like, one of them is, like, half burrow, so, like, half donkey or something.
Right, so it's probably cheaper. It's not a big deal. Yeah. It's just something that was, like, driving me insane, because they're, like, immediately, like, $10. I'm like, okay, that's weird. And then when he says 50 and the guy's complaining about 50, I'm like, I'm totally confused now. But whatever. So I mean, it's not part of the story, so.
What's up with you know, staying in this scene, what's up with everyone whittling in town?
Yeah, man. Like Marshall's doing it. Ben Johnson is doing it. The Elder is doing it.
Well, the Sheriff Marshall and his deputy are really weird when they show up, and he's like whittling, and they're just like looking at them.
They don't respond to him at all. Hardly.
But it seems like you've just seen like the Clegg gang, and the sheriff says something like doesn't look like them, or something like that, and like I just assume he's talking about the robbers, but it's like I don't even know how. Like, was that in Crystal City? I have no idea. We don't know that, but we know later that they are looking for that gang. But yeah, just like whittling as they just like inspect and look at the horse. It was so strange, just silently doing
just
that.
Like
then business, like the Elder's whittling and the Ben Johnson's whittling at one point too.
Somebody had an idea one day on set, and they handed one of the actors a piece of wood and a knife, and the other actors were like, "That's a great piece of business. I want to do that too." You know?
Or it's like who John Ford was like. Ben Johnson doesn't know what to do with his hands.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. What's with this fucking guy? He's swinging his arms around. Give him something to do.
Yeah.
I do like, made me laugh, Jick, Jack, Jenny and the Bean Gun. Like, I don't know what that is. We got a card game they were playing, but when he said it the first time, I was like, that is a wild line. Jick, Jack, Jenny and the Bean Gun. Sounds good.
It's like the town is weird because again, like the marshal doesn't just throw people in jail. The townspeople like kind of seem nice, and it's just like you're so used to people just like jump to shooting in these, and that doesn't happen. However, they clearly hate the Mormons, and like you have until 7:30 until you are completely out of town. Like,
yeah,
get the F out, and like they've clearly kicked out the doctor and that caravan or that cart. It's like they're very intolerant, but also just weirdly friendly for this kind of movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they don't. There's no explanation about why the Mormons are being asked to leave, right?
There's no explanation.
We're supposed to just know that they're...
During the gin game, it's clear...
Mm.
Like, he says something quite mean about the Mormons. I don't remember what it was. And when Ben Johnson and Carrie are talking to Elder, and, like, the issue of Mormonism comes up, you know, Elder confirms it and says, like, that's why I keep my hat on at all times, so my horns don't show. It's like, he's used to... people having some pretty strong feelings about being Mormon. And it also mentions, like, I got more wives than blah, blah, blah. He's got like, the whole Rolodex of Mormon insults at his command.
It's unusual that Mormons would be included in a story, right? Like, in a movie like this at this time?
I guess so.
I think so.
I haven't seen a million Westerns, but I've seen a few... And I can count on one hand the amount that have Mormons as, like, a central group in the story.
I wonder if that's just, like, if you've got Mormons, you feel like you've got to deal with Mormon religion.
Exactly. And it's like Ward Bond is a likable character in this, and he's, you know, one of the sort of damsels in distress almost with the rest of the group. And it's like they don't ever, you know, they spend zero time confronting anything about the religion. It's just the fact that he's part of a group that is disdained by society. And
they're traveling west, which is common to, you know, like the pioneer story and the wagon train story. And I wrote down I wonder if he's like a wartime elder. Like he's got his sin in days that he references. He clearly is quick to words of wrath as the Abe Lincoln guy.
Yeah,
mentions and gets scolded all the time, and it seems like he is maybe a guy chosen for this job because
is his name
he's really
Elder
a strong leader. They just
or
call
is
him
he
Elder, right?
Or is he Elder like he's the Elder of a church? Like
no,
I think
he's
Elder.
He, of
he's
a
an Elder of the church.
Okay, so why does
Elder Wiggs?
You gotta help me out with this because I actually wrote this as a note and then deleted it when he first shows up and they've just sent the guy. the marshal on the horse jumping around, you know, and Elder Wiggs and the other guy show up for the first time. Adam Perkins, the
Abe Lincoln looking guy.
Sorry. When they first show up, Ben Johnson says, "Howdy, Elder." Like, he says that to him, like, as if he knows him. How does he know him?
Well, yeah, he doesn't know him. I'm guessing.
Why does he call him Elder then?
Because that's like a title for much of evangelical Christians.
How does he know he's an evangelical Christian? Just walking up.
He's got.
Why wouldn't they?
You saw those hats.
He's just a guy, though. Like, he's just a guy walking down the street.
Hats and bonnets.
I think that's a weird line, honestly. And I wrote it down because I thought it was cool at first. Because I was like, oh, that's like you call somebody who's like older than you, like an elder. You're just saying it like it's a term of endearment or something. But now I'm like, the whole movie, they call him Elder. And I feel like Elder's his name, honestly. I don't feel like it's a title. I feel like that's his name.
No, it's a title. He's boss of the group. He's leading the train. He's leading the mission out
he's
west.
Boss of the group?
Yeah.
What about Perkins? Who's Perkins then? Who's constantly scolding him about everything?
Perkins is just an old guy who's making sure this wartime elder stays in line.
What's wartime elder mean? I know you just explained this. What does that mean? No,
it's like he is the leader chosen for a very difficult task. Like, he is the leader we need.
What is that? Is that this moment of hardship?
He's a consigliere, you know?
Oh, like a wartime. Oh, like you're not a wartime consigliere.
I got this from Doctor Who.
Okay.
John Hurt is the wartime doctor. It's revealed.
They got it. Mm. They got it from Godfather, guaranteed.
Probably.
But anyway, okay. Well, I don't know. We can agree to disagree. I don't think there's a way to find out if that's the case or not. I think Elder is his name, and I think that it's insane that he calls him Elder out of the gate.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
It's funny too because like at one point like somebody, I don't remember who, somebody calls him Grandpa, and he's like, "Don't you be Grandpa on me, you whippersnapper."
It's like, thanks for confirming you're a grandfather.
Elder that or calls Perkins that?
Elder.
Really? Okay, I don't remember that.
All right, in the Church of the Latter-day Saints, Elder is a priesthood office.
Elder's an office in like all churches. I mean, that's not, I'm not saying that.
That's literally what Shahir just said.
I know, you said it's a thing in the Mormon church. I know that.
Well, I said evangelical churches, which is not fair to plenty of churches, I'm sure.
Okay, look, the point is, I know that elder is a term for like a specific sort of person in the hierarchy of a church system, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't also be his name. I feel like it's his name. I don't know.
You think he's Elder Wiggs?
Well, I mean,
because he's got the title plus his name is Elder.
I don't know that he has the title. You're saying that. I don't know that. They don't ever say that he's a wartime elder. Nobody says that. That's your interpretation.
No, I made that up.
Yeah, I don't know.
I make that up.
I think that Perkins seems like he's the one who's really in charge, and maybe like Ward Bond is like his underling who's sort of doing all the work.
So, let's see.
Well, here we go.
Here's a good
read the
Wikipedia.
Script?
The Wikipedia description. A Mormon wagon train led by the Elder Wiggs. The Elder Wiggs.
Well, who wrote that? I mean,
probably the Mormon Church.
No, I mean, who wrote?
I know. I said what I said.
What did you say?
The Mormon Church wrote this Wikipedia.
I mean, there's not a like a source.
No, not for that one.
Mm.
It says say the elder, and then the elder is like a link to the what an elder is in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So bizarre, dude. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I think both interpretations are valid.
I think it's fine. This is like I don't think we need to attack each other on this front. It's not very close.
Okay.
I want to talk about the Cleggs.
Yeah, let's do it. Cleggs are the Cleggs are when it gets interesting when the Cleggs show up, in my opinion. So,
but like one of the things that I noticed, like especially about there's like the three like younger dudes, and then there's the kind of older one, and then there's Uncle Shiloh.
Mm-hmm.
The older guy, that guy could not act. He was horrible. He was just walking around with his mouth open half the time, and he was
Luke.
Oh, this is happening, Uncle Shiloh.
Yeah. Oh, like, I mean, wasn't he supposed to be...
He was, like, slow, right?
Touched, yeah. Or
was he?
Is that what they have, what they would have said?
Okay,
yeah, he's supposed to be slow. Doesn't
Uncle Shiloh said he's like he makes comment like
yeah.
Okay,
right.
Sorry, I didn't. Well, I mean, he has many disparaging things to say about all of his sons. Anyway,
yeah.
No, I think Luke Clegg is supposed to be like slow, but I agree that like the performance of that is very over the top. It's like this goofy sort of, you know. Of the time, almost comedic sort of.
And it's funny too, because like, this, I thought it was kind of like odd that like, when, Shiloh is like confronting the medicine doctor, and he's like, you know, like he sees that he has booze, so he's like, ooh, you know, booze, but then you know, it's like, you know. Read them words, and he literally says, like, it really literally says on their wagon, snake oil.
Yeah.
And that, like, is, like, no indication to these,
well,
to these
that's
hoods.
A, the whole snake oil being, thing.
They're talking to a fellow grifter.
Isn't that, like, a new, yeah, like, a more modern saying, like, snake oil salesman?
The snake oil salesman of the time was... believed. That's like why, because they were grifters then, nobody understood that, but now it's like we say a snake oil sale, because like they do the same thing in like Red Dead Redemption. Like if you play Red Dead Redemption ever, they have like guys on the side of the road with wagons who are selling snake oil, miracle tonics, these kinds of things, you know. And
I think that's definitely
to give the audience, to let the audience know that he's a huckster.
Yeah,
you know, that he's not a real doctor. And I mean, then whenever he's confronted about helping Uncle Shiloh with his wound, he clearly says, like, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not trained to do this. I cannot do this.
Which is when Luke gets in one of his not great line readings with, I don't like liars.
Yeah. just as soon shoot a liar as see one.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I don't like Luke. I don't like the fact that each, like, they feel like they have to give each son this, like, very, very different sort of personality, you know, as if we need to know anything about them. You know? They're just bad guys. We get it.
Well, it's like, I actually, and I can't remember, like, what the fourth one does. You know, there's, like, the one that gets whipped for, like, attacking the Navajo woman. And there's Floyd, who, like, just stares creepily for the most part.
Floyd tries to rape the woman who's with the doctor.
Yeah.
He grabs her and tries to take her in the back.
The prostitute?
Yeah. The girl the Hoochie Coochie show.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Denver.
Okay. Well, no.
That's Joe Andrew.
Oh, okay.
He's with an older lady and he's with a younger lady.
Oh, Joe Andrew. Yeah. Joe Andrew. Yeah. That's the one he picks her up and like walks to the back of the wagon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm.
So I don't know which... I don't know if the one who gets whipped is Jesse or Reese.
I don't know.
But, like, that guy's got his thing. And I don't know what the other one does. Like, I can't even picture him in my mind right now.
I think Jesse and Reese, like, look the exact same to me. I remember, like, they both just have, like, black beards and...
Yeah.
They're about the same age. I don't know. Again, I don't know.
More.
Yeah, why is it important to know anything about these guys, honestly? Mm. I mean, Uncle Shiloh's got enough personality for the whole crew. The rest of them. And Uncle Shiloh, played by Charles Kemper. Charles Kemper was in Yellow Sky, apparently.
Oh.
Although I don't remember him from Yellow Sky, but he's in... He played Walrus.
Walrus. Okay.
That's my note for Charles Kemper. Okay, delete. I love the the whole movie. I sort of went into this movie expecting it to be more of like a like they join the wagon train as Wagon Master, and then they're like sort of getting out of jams constantly and having to fight off Indians. And then the Indians show up, you know, and it's like the Indians are friendly. They like
Mormons.
Indians. Yeah. Mm. And then a lot of it's just like the group of people in the wagon train, like hanging out together and like talking. And they have a dance at one point. And Harry Carey Jr.'s character asks that one girl to dance, and the other guy gets mad, the other Mormon guy. He's all mm-hmm. mad about it. And then when they get on the dance floor together, like the two guys start dancing like at each other, almost like they're fighting. I thought that was pretty cool. I could have done more with that. Like that was an interesting idea. I mean, they were getting like really violent about like stomping on the ground and stuff. I thought that was kind of a cool idea. Like that's how they dealt with it without having to hit each other, even though I think they had already hit each other. But at that point, also like
that was the same guy as like the. You're going to say hell. Hell ain't cussing. It's geography.
Yeah, like where same guy. Yeah. They're next to each other putting their saddles
bump,
on. And
yeah,
they start
bump butts.
Into,
yeah.
And also, like, I don't know much about Mormonism, but like Mormons dance. Is that a thing?
And it's I don't know. And it's funny when Clegg shows up and he's like, we saw fire, but then we heard your mountain music. And mm-hmm. we just knew singing and dancing is going to be Christians about. Which
right.
Is such a funny.
Feels counterintuitive.
In like the South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, you know, we got our Baptists who won't do that.
Mm. According to Google AI overview, yes, Mormons dance, and they have a long history of dancing as part of their culture and community. They used to do something called stake dances, monthly dances at church that feature modern music but are free of alcohol, drugs, and smoking.
Huh.
That's really bizarre. I did not know that.
Hey.
Brigham Young, which they mentioned Brigham Young, also in this movie, he instructed pioneers to organize dances while crossing the plains by circling their wagons at night. Classic. This is exactly what happens in the movie. So obviously they're just doing as Brigham instructed.
Mm.
So that answers that question.
Look, I wonder if our sort of where we grew up influences how we assume
of course, yeah.
Christianity
yeah,
is with
for sure.
Just the sort of prudish nature of the singing and dancing.
Well, it's like Baptists don't dance, right? Is that the one that doesn't dance?
And it's not even all Baptists.
Right.
It's
just like hardcore Southern
ones,
Baptists.
Yeah. The ones you're talking about who don't dance.
They use they appear to be using real Indians in this, like they cast actual Native Americans. Is that correct?
Jim Thorpe is on the cast list.
Jim Thorpe?
Who's Jim Thorpe?
Oh, Jim Thorpe is...
He's a major football star.
Yeah, he's a hugely famous...
The biggest football star of his day.
Yeah, and he did some acting as well.
Pretty sure he went to the Olympics, too.
Is he a Native American?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I never heard of him. Jim,
wow. Yeah, sorry, and there's like a movie called Jim Thorpe All-American where Burt Lancaster plays Jim Thorpe.
Oh, yeah.
which I think came out around this time. Yeah, 1951.
Mm.
He's like, he doesn't have a line. He's apparently just like in the group that greets them. I did not recognize him, but I saw his name in the credits at the very beginning.
But the rest of those people, the guy who does talk is a Native American, right?
It seems so.
So. And I know that the woman, and I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now, the woman who plays the young Navajo Indian who gets assaulted, I believe, it's played by Movida Castaneda, so I'm assuming she's like Hispanic or something. But anyway,
and it's like I guess we're giving John Ford, you know, the benefit of the doubt here, assuming that like he has these people speaking like a Navajo language, which I should know the name of that language. I've seen enough of that show on AMC, but I cannot think of it.
Dark Winds.
Yeah, no, that's the show. But like they say the name of the language all the time on that show, I can't pull it up.
Okay.
And that's, again, I guess he could have had him just saying gibberish.
Don't think he did. Yeah, it seems insane. I mean, not that, you know, I wouldn't put it past like this.
Ford is like, he's like one of those guys where it's like early depictions of Native Americans, not great in John Ford's filmography, but
right.
In many ways got progressively better, but not in all ways. Yeah.
Yeah. I was impressed. I mean, being in a movie from 1950, it seems like, you know, I would have assumed they would have used white actors even at this time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, we had we had Burt Lancaster playing a Native American 1 year later.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, all through the 50s and probably through the 2000s, we're mostly dealing with white actors.
Yeah, and they have Paul Newman plays a half Indian in not what is it, not HUD, the other one,
Hombre.
Yeah, Hombre. There you go.
Hombre.
Yeah.
I liked the scene when they are confronted by the marshal again.
Oh yeah.
The posse that's looking for the Cleggs. A lot of tension there, a lot of suspense, and I thought it was really good, and I just wish it would have, like, I thought it was going to end with, like, that was going to be the ending, you know? Like, they were going to somehow alert them, and it was going to... But it just sort of ends in this very, like, almost comedic...
Well...
Not almost comedic, comedic way.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I love when Ben Johnson's, like, pushing the guy's hat and, like, slapping him with the side of bacon.
Slaps him with the bacon, that's so good. Yeah, I actually laughed at that. That was really good.
I just laughed at the marshal in general. He's just, you know... He's not, like, pressing too hard.
No.
Which is okay, because he, like... has met these Mormons and stuff. He's got no reason to assume they're hiding the gang. But the this happens 67 minutes in, where the marshal and his posse catch up with the group, and I was like, oh fuck, this wagon train has gone virtually nowhere this whole time.
Yeah, actually,
it turns out like they're camping not that far away as they're searching, but it's still like it was like. Damn, wagon trains probably moved real slow.
Yeah.
But anyways, it goes nowhere, and they get away, right? And then they have to cross the treacherous hills or whatever that is. I don't even understand what's going on at the end. Okay, honestly, they have to move across some bit of land.
To make a pass for the wagons over these mountains, this mountain. Mm. I read about this because initially when he's like, we got to start digging, I was like, what? Just going to dig through this mountain? Like, yeah. That's not going to work. But kind of looking this up brought me to why this movie or what inspired this movie, because apparently sort of by digging, they're like digging out like as a flat as possible trail. To like get themselves up and over the mountain, which like honestly seems like it would take just, like fucking months to do, right? And this isn't like a super tall mountain, but it's like it is big enough where a wagon is not going over it. And it's hilarious the way that they lose that first wagon, and I guess whoever was driving that just fucking died. But the this is a story. That apparently happened, like one of the Mormon trains did this, like kind of carving out pieces of the mountain to get through, widening a trail. It seemed like they were more like cutting into, like if you're on a cliff face, cutting into like the wall to make it wide enough for the wagons more than just like straightening it out. But John Ford's son was told this story. And that is what inspired him to write the screenplay for his dad. And John Ford, like, famously, like, changed up everything, like, on set. And, like, one of the quotes on the IMDb trivia is, like, basically his quote to his son, like, hey, I really liked your script. I even filmed a few pages of it. I'm guessing that... In the original version of this, there was much more focus on this part, just considering it was like the inspiration. And they don't feel the need to, like John Ford feels the need to explain very little of this to us. Just expects us to go with like, yeah, we're cutting into the mountain to get the wagons over somehow.
Guess what? Yeah. They would cut to the shots like this sort of wide shot of these guys on top of a plateau, just like scraping dirt off the plateau with a shovel. And I'm just like, I don't know what these guys are doing. Like,
There's a lot of dudes up there. And I all we know is that the grain's got to get across.
Yeah. I did really like the line though, when the professor volunteers to put his to drive the second wagon over after the first one crashes, and he says, "There's nothing valuable in my wagon, including the driver." Like, ooh. I thought that was pretty good. Like, he's just, like, ready to sacrifice himself. Which reminds me that I meant to mention, when you said earlier that that when Ben Johnson and Harry Carrier approached to be the wagon masters of this train, that they deny it, they refuse it. And I immediately was like, I'm wrapping up my unit on the hero's journey right now. And I was like, immediately in my head, I was like, oh, refusal of the call. That's like, classic. I wonder why they'll change their minds. Cause you know, they have.
So let's, the going over like that ends up being sort of our climax, or it's part of our climax. We also get the shootout, but the shootout requires some setup that we have not covered here. So one, it's like, yes, Johnson and Carey have guns. They're the only two people in the party that have pistols, which I read would be extremely inaccurate. The Mormons did like hunt. They would have had shotguns and stuff.
It's also not true because that woman had a gun.
Right. Well, right. It was the kid.
Right. Whatever.
Kid passes to the woman.
One of them. One of them had a gun.
From grandpa. Right. Mm. And so we get this line. When the Cleggs show up, because the Cleggs notice that the Wagon Master's the only ones with guns, and they're like, you ever draw on anyone? And Johnson says, no, sir, just snakes. All serious. And, of course, we get a moment, you know, it's like sometime after they meet with the Navajo, and, of course, like one of the Clegg sons has been whipped for attacking the woman, but they turn on the group as we assumed from the beginning that they would do. And the masters have to ditch their guns. And we do see that boy kind of secretly passing the gun from one vest pocket to the next, passing it to his mom. She like keeps it under. I always wondered, is like, is the gun going to keep moving like down the line? Are we trying to get the gun to Harry Carey like right now? But no, it's just moving one person. But Harry Carey does eventually get it. And before we know that, like, Sandy, or Carey, who plays Sandy, like, has a couple of these exchanges with Johnson's character, Travis. And, like, the last one is like, him being like, when are you going to make your play? As in, like, when are you going to, like, kill these guys? When are we gonna deal with the Cleggs? And from that point, as a viewer, I'm like, okay. Like, Travis, secret badass, he's going to get rid of these guys. And, of course, we see, like, when Harry Carey gets the gun, he's, like, telling Carey, like, you're going to, like, blow off your hand. Like, what do you ever shoot besides, like, besides tin cans and beer bottles? And he says it in, like, the most John Wayne-y voice in that moment. And by the end of this, when the Cleggs, we got the grain cart. It's like the last one to go over, right? Last cart to go over this damn mountain that we've been digging, presumably for like 8 months. although it's 30 seconds of screen time. And they basically just like we're going to fuck with you guys now. Like, we want you to remember us. And that's like, we're going to shoot the guy, shoot Harry Carey's like rival, with the like love interest rival, get that guy.
They want to steal the grain.
He says we're valuable gold, but he seemed like he's mentioned something about like going like full tilt up the mountain with the grain, as though he wanted to like make the horse like run up the mountain just like to ensure that it crashed.
Oh, I thought he meant like you need to run like up the mountain as fast as you can so we can just get past everybody and get out of here with the grain.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe
I thought of that you as, could I be right of them as like sabotaging. I don't know what's right in that instance. I don't know what the read is. All I know is that Harry Carey, like, he takes out his gun and he starts shooting. And no one is ready for it. Ben Johnson does not complete his arc of being some secret badass. He just, like, once it starts going, he, like, grabs a gun from the first dead guy so that he can help. And again, this is like, it's 20 seconds, or maybe, of this. And then it is all over. And,
that's
and Ben Johnson's mad, so he throws the gun away.
That's Rescue from Without, by the way. That's Harry Carey's not the hero. Ben Johnson is, but Harry Carey's the one who helps Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson's the one who deals the death blow. He's the one who shoots Shiloh.
Yeah.
See? it all works out.
I thought it was bizarre to like set up that Johnson's going to do this, and then he has no plan. He had no plan. What was the plan?
If it's interesting also that Harry Carey asks him what his plan is, and that, but then like doesn't give him the gun. Like, what is he? He holds on to the gun. Like, yeah, he's going to do something.
Seems like Johnson just really doesn't want a gun.
Man.
Maybe Johnson's gun getting taken away was like the best day of his life.
Which is also weird, too, because it's like, if they're going to waste time setting up that Ben Johnson is a prankster who's able to whistle and then make the horses go crazy just for this other part later on, you know, 45 minutes later. Why didn't they set him up as being like a good shot or something to have, you know what I mean? It's like, because I agree, that line doesn't make a lot of sense. Like Harry Carey saying, when are you going to make your play, as if, unless he's, it's just like, obviously Harry Carey is the second fiddle to Ben Johnson. So he's just looking to him for leadership in that moment, and Ben Johnson has no fucking clue what to do.
Yeah,
but I mean, he it works out. He grabs the gun, he shoots everybody.
Yeah, and then then the grain gets over mountain. And that's basically it. We have a Mormon conversion ad, with like the whole group kind of walking into frame, and Ward Bond and one other, I think it's a kid, kind of standing taller on this rock, and the sky behind them looks so good. That was, by the way, I love the way this movie looks. I thought like virtually all of the day for night, like skies and like vistas were awesome. And I know that's like, sure, like in, you know, a good looking Western should look good. And this one very much did look good.
Yeah. I'm a big fan when a good looking Western looks good. I'm trying to find, what are you referring to here? Where they're standing on a hill with the sky?
So it's like they just,
it's like the very end, they're all just kind of looking out like, we made it.
Right. Okay. You know? That's followed by,
well, then we get our montage.
We get the montage of them like getting with the women and everything. But then this weird moment, right? Why do they end the movie with the same shots of them crossing the river that they showed earlier in the movie? It makes no sense.
That seems like a little bit fuck up. But there, I had another moment earlier in the movie where it's like they use the same sound effect, like 10 seconds apart, which is like, it's not enough time. Like, you can tell it's the same exact sound effect. Just in school, I did that once where they like made us edit this like 5 second like car chase thing, and like I screwed up by like using the same sound effect of a tire squealing like twice. And when the professor played it back to me, he was like, "You hear that, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, yeah, I hear it." So I don't know, and I understand the intention of the ending. It's like, this ends in the middle, right? We don't have a resolution. We got over the mountain, but we're not there. Like, they are very much not there. Like, the journey is still going on. They are still in the shit. They still have dangerous river crossings and things like that. But they should have shot a new river crossing.
Yes.
Definitely should have shot
a I don't even know why we need to see the river crossing. Like, I'm fine with trials. Just fade to black, though, dude. Like, I get it. Like, the shot of them that you were referring to, where they're all staring off into the landscape, like, that's... they reached the promised land. It's over. Like, that.
They haven't reached it.
But it's fine. We don't need to know that, like, there's you know, more stuff coming, because it doesn't matter. Whatever trials they're going through are completely irrelevant, because the movie's over. The story of this movie is not their trials after the movie ends. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, you know? I think it's ridiculous to show that, personally. But, you know, again, the movie is like, the movie is it's got, it just feels like stuff like the romance between Ben Johnson's character and Joanne Drew, and then, or was it with Joanne Drew?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Harry Carey with whoever he's interested in. Like, all these little things they have to feel like they have to, like, wrap up at the end. Like, I feel like none of that matters at all. You could excise all that stuff. Like, it means nothing. It just feels like studio notes from, yeah, like, this period of, you know, Western.
And the same
with the songs, if you want to get into the song. I mean, the songs are, like, these goofy, like, this goofy song about a wagon master that all the characters somehow know. I don't know what that's about. It feels like a Disney movie, you know?
I'm gonna push back on the songs. Like, I really like the Sons of Pioneers or something.
Yeah, Sons of the Pioneers.
Like, not like their theme song, like an 1849 or like whatever. I don't need that. But the songs within the movie keep the. Like, I have mixed feelings about, like, showing, like, the couples on their wagons at the end. Because I really, like, I really like that in the movie. It's like, we don't focus. Like, the movie is not about Johnson and Drew and their romance.
Mm-hmm.
But we get, like, a few of these scenes. Like, they clearly like each other, things like that. And we get even less with Harry Carey, and I could not tell you that actor's name or that character's name. Like, she doesn't really speak. She's kind of just a prop, which is not great. But the, like, I'm fine with showing them together as, like, a tidy little ending for them. I guess because I'm happy we didn't spend too much time with them in the movie.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's, you know, it's like for a Western, I guess I'm like, I have such a specific idea of what I want a Western to be or what I want from a Western. So, like, the minute this, I mean, literally the second they run into this broken down wagon with the professor and these women, I was like, get me, like, please don't do this. I don't want these people in this movie. and they do. They just clog the whole fucking movie down. It bums me out so hard.
They do not. Oh, my God.
They so do, dude. And when the Cleggs show up, I'm like, thank God the Cleggs are here. Now we've actually got some kind of conflict in this movie. There's some kind of danger and element of suspense. And it's like, before them, it was just like this. I was like, I don't know what this movie is. They're just like these guys who are leaving a wagon train of completely, like, everybody's a good person. Everybody's nice. The biggest problem they have is that these guys don't know they're not supposed to be taking baths or shaving. You know, it's like, and the Mormons have this weird, you know, moral code where they won't even use the water that the guy
changes. John.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Do you know who really likes this movie, I think?
You?
Well, besides me.
I don't know.
Kevin Costner.
Because that fucking scene is in Horizon. That whole damn scene is in Horizon. Luke Wilson is Wagon Master.
I know.
I don't like
the Wagon Master stuff in Horizon.
I'm not saying you do. I'm just like, I can't believe Costner lifted that whole bit.
Oh yeah.
From this, like, the whole thing. He lifted the entire thing.
You want to see an amazing version of this? And it's literally the same idea.
I watched this movie. I've seen it.
No. It's executed way better.
Nah.
Yeah. You want to hear it? You ready?
I don't know.
Ballad of Buster Scruggs. There's this, the wagon train sequence in that is way better at getting across that idea, that specific idea of, like, these people who don't know what they're doing being led by someone who does know what they're doing. That it's just way more. It's way more interesting in that. It's way more visceral, and obviously, it's, like, violent. It has to do with, like, fighting.
It's
and
so,
stuff.
Yeah, it is so much different.
It's different, but it's the same.
And I do love that section in that movie. But the again, this is doing, like, a very different thing. Like, this is,
I agree.
This
I don't
is
like
loose
I don't like
and
it.
Shaggy, and this fits into, like, like Stars in My Crown, like the Jacques Turner Western. Mm. It's like, it's just like, it's like pleasant vibes. Everything, like, yeah, we've got a bad guy. There's going to be a shootout. But like, for the most part, it's like just people trying to figure stuff out and get along. And it's pleasant. And I could just like hang out with this movie because it's like 85 minutes and I love looking at it. And I like the performances. We haven't really talked about the performances outside of the Clegg brothers.
I have notes about the performances.
I like Joe Andrew in that smaller role. I really like Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson looks very good on a horse. He does that cool lasso shit at the end. Like, that's a natural fucking dude. And I thought Ward Bond was awesome.
The only one I don't agree with, I don't love Ward Bond in this.
Oh, dude.
I'm not a big fan. I was shocked at how much I liked Ben Johnson in this, actually, because I have, the only thing I've ever really seen Ben Johnson or I know him from is Dillinger, where he plays Melvin Purvis. And he's just such a, like, he's an asshole in that movie. And I'm just like, you know, so I'm like immediately going to like, oh, this guy sucks. But then like, he plays such it's completely counter, you know, to this.
He won an Oscar.
Who, Ben Johnson?
Yeah.
For?
Supporting role in The Last Picture Show.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I don't remember that at all. Okay.
Mm. Yeah, me neither.
I seem to remember seeing that he was in that recently, but I don't remember him from it. But anyways, yeah, I like Ben Johnson in this movie a lot. I thought he was really good in the role. And if anything, I would have liked to have seen him like that, like his part of the film. Like, he's the star of the film, but there's just there's so many other things going on. I'd like a character study about the Ben Johnson character, you know? And like the idea that he doesn't know, that he doesn't have a plan at the end is interesting. And of course, they don't investigate that at all, or interrogate that idea at all, that he doesn't know. It's something that we're inferring 80 years later, you know?
This isn't investigatory. This is not a procedural.
I know. This plays into like what I want from a Western. It's like, I want these like, it's just little things that they could tweak to make it better for me personally, but not for everybody else.
I remembered this movie before I rewatched it. I remembered it being episodic and shaggy. I did not remember it like being this much of like a feel good movie, which is again, like as soon as they start singing, I was like, oh, I'm going to get yelled at. Right? Like,
it's not that. I mean, it's not like it's a musical or something. They sing like twice, right? It's not a big deal.
I think it's like three times. It's closer to a musical. Look, if the
you would say
if the Joker 2 discourse happening right now, they need to go by.
Let's not go there, please.
I don't think that this. I don't find this to be a musical at all. Only because like people break into song, but they're playing guitars and shit, right? Yeah. Like
it is like real. We're not breaking reality with music, right? We're a group who's singing and dancing together.
They like music. They're the Mormon, you know, the Christian folk love singing and dancing, as sure Uncle Shiloh Clegg says.
That's right.
That mountain music, he calls it. Mountains? Like, where do the Mormons come from? I don't know.
Did you think about and I doubt you did, but like Culpeper Cattle Company crossed my mind when watching this too, because it has a similar sort of the ending of it is about them defending the whatever that Christian group is at the end. I don't know if they're Mormons too or not.
I did not remember that. I did not remember. All right.
I thought of that too, because it's also about a wagon train and the wagon master. Not a wagon master or a wagon train, but it's like a guy who leads this group of, you know, cattle people.
Mm. Yeah. Which, you know, similar enough. Dick Richards. Who would name their kid Richard Richards?
That's a great question.
Sorry, I was just seeing if I could quickly see what kind of a group that was, but I don't know. And they looked more like Mennonites? Didn't they have that vibe going on?
Who looks like Mennonites?
The Abe Culpepper Lincoln group? Guy, for sure. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, so, I don't, you, yeah, I don't know what they were in Culpepper.
The Abe Lincoln guy. I guess, you know, like, these Mormons just have, like, bonnets and a few beards, but the...
Yeah.
And for some reason, now that, like, the Culpepper scene's in my head, I feel like they were a little bit more minimalist, but maybe... Yeah, that's not true. I was in Iowa last weekend, and Sarah and some friends went to breakfast at a cafe that ended up being, like, completely run by Mennonites. I decided I didn't want breakfast, so I didn't go. And Sarah said I missed out on, like, the best chocolate milk ever.
Oh, bummer.
Dang, yeah. Man.
That would have been a cool sight to see, I'm sure.
Well, chocolate now you got to go back.
No, the Mennonites.
I mean, you don't want to drink chocolate milk, man.
Yeah.
I don't care what your religion is if you make good chocolate milk.
The religion's not important. I'm saying the way that they conduct and dress themselves, you know, it's just, like, weird. Like, it's like going to, like, Amish country or something and, you know, seeing...
Oh, yeah, well...
People act a different way, like engrossing yourself in a culture, you know, for a minute. But anyway, I'm done with my notes. I got nothing else to say about Wagon Master.
You know,
it's my fourth John Ford movie.
I think it's my third.
All westerns.
And you guys are done. You're like, I've seen enough.
No, not at all.
Never going to watch anymore.
I like my favorite one so far is My Darling Clementine.
Interesting.
Out of the four that I've seen, The Searchers, Stagecoach, this, and My Darling Clementine.
Clementine. Yeah, I think my last...
It would be between either this or Young Mr. Lincoln, because I don't know. I've seen The Searchers. I thought it looked amazing, but I just, John Wayne just rubbed me all the wrong ways. So I don't know if that was, you know, my
impression
at the time that made me rate it so low, or if it was just, I genuinely have a hatred for John Wayne. It could have been either.
You might. And I like John Wayne in that movie. He is, he is not likable. He is a bad person, and I do think the movie knows that, you know, he is not the hero or a hero, even though he is the protagonist. My last note is I thought you said you didn't shoot people or you didn't draw on anyone, and you said, yeah, no people, just snakes.
Yeah, it's a great line.
It's a great line.
I do love that. I do, like, genuinely love that callback. Great line. You know, and the gunfight is good. Like, I don't mind it. I could have used more gunfighting, but I mean, again, I don't mind that it's like a build up to that. I sort of wish it built up, like, the whole movie was a build up to that instead of it being, you know, a sort of 5 minute build up at the end. But
I think you guys should probably both watch The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Yeah, I know.
Which
I know.
It's like, that might be. Like, if you're not going to hate John Wayne, Kevin, maybe that's one. Like, where...
Oh, Rio Bravo, dude. Have you seen Rio Bravo, Kevin?
Sorry, I was...
No.
I was trying to stay only in the John Ford lane, but
Ford. Watch Rio Bravo. Rio Bravo rocks. And he's good in it. He's
Rio,
like,
Bravo does rock, yeah.
He's amazing in it, and Dean Martin fucking rules in Rio Bravo. So. Yeah,
he does.
Nice.
I mean, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, also incredible. And James Stewart is great in it as well. But, all right, let's just do those ratings, you know? Mm-hmm. Hit me with those ratings.
Let's go. I'm going to give it a 3.
All right, same. That's wrong. That's also wrong.
That's wrong.
We're giving this the only rating it could deserve, even, or that it could get. And even though there are problems, it just you just want to turn it back on after it's over. It's a 5. This is a 5.
Five?
Again, I don't have a disease of just seeing a John Ford movie.
Well, you just went muted, bud. Uh-oh. Are you, Kevin, are you hearing this?
No, I'm not.
And now there you are.
I don't have a disease. For movies the first time I watched them, I had the disease of watching them more and more and liking them more and more. Sean Ford for life. This movie rules. 5 out of 5.
I could have sworn. Now let me just look real quick. Wagon Master, right? Okay, I have. Did you accidentally put in a rating or something? Because I have. I'm looking at my screen right now, and it says 3.5.
Me?
Yeah.
The Wagon Master?
Yes.
Maybe.
For your last review for John Ford Delivers a Straight Forward.
I deleted my 4.5 in my heart. It was definitely at a 4.5.
Bro, I remember seeing a 4.5.
I remember seeing a 4.5 also, and right now I'm looking at it, and it says 3.5.
Show your activity.
I'm going to take a screenshot and send it to you.
Oh, no, I do see it.
Yeah?
So I wonder if I put in the wrong thing, went back and immediately fixed it. Like without editing the review.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it's like a mistake. Yeah, but
the review I had, or the rating I had when I deleted it, was definitely a 4.5.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember seeing a 4.5 while I was watching it. I was looking at the Letterboxd page, and I was remember seeing the.
I don't know what I did there. I can tell you right now, though, that I'm about to go put in that 5. Putting that 5 right now.
Mm.
You guys suck it. You guys suck it.
I like your review, though, from 2013.
I reviewed it?
Yeah, you got a well-written review here. John Ford delivers a straightforward, entertaining Western about community, friendship, and Mormons. The great Ben Johnson and Harry Carey Jr. lead a party of Mormons through the desert toward the San Juan Valley and encounter friendly Navajos, a drunk show troupe, and dirty thieves along the way. It's lighter in plot than the typical Ford film, but the characters are well-drawn. Highlights are the aforementioned Johnson, Ward Bond, as Mormon elder, a reformed cusser.
I have no memory of writing these words. These words don't even sound like me.
It's 11 years ago, dude.
Look at me. Look at me trying to write like a legitimate like capsule review. What was that thinking?
Yeah.
The great Ben Johnson. It's probably the first Ben Johnson movie I'd ever seen. It was so full of shit.
How many Ford films would you have seen in 2013? Because you said it's lighter in plot than the typical Ford film.
Oh, like a ton. Like
okay. All right.
I was making sure that wasn't. No, I was going through them at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Very intentionally trying to get through the Ford westerns, especially, but then some other ones. Yeah, I have seen 63 of his movies.
Jesus Christ, dude! Is he your most seen director then? He's got to be, right?
He's got to be. I mean, just like by virtue of how many films he made.
Right.
Mm. I think him and Michael Curtiz are probably the two I've seen the most from.
You can look it up right now.
Well, I'm about to.
Michael
Curtiz is another one that made like over 100 movies. I've seen a lot
of them. While you're looking that number up, we can do
87.
Roulette.
Wow.
I didn't even think about roulette. Roulette's going to suck for this.
Yeah,
well, it's going to suck for you guys. Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
I'm just kidding. Like I've seen like barely any Joanne Drew or Ben Johnson. Like,
yeah, give me a break, dude. You know you see more Ben Johnson than us.
The great Ben Johnson.
I'll tell you what. Let's just use Ben Johnson.
Sure.
Here we go.
I mean, why would you do that? Like, you just said, you know, I've seen more.
I know you see more of everyone on this list.
God, I've seen more. Ben Johnson's in a bunch of stuff.
He's been in some shit, dude.
Angels in the Outfield.
Right?
Yeah.
I've seen that, so you don't have that one.
But, I should have done, like, Joanne Drew.
Okay, let's
but
do
you
Joanne.
Probably have. You probably have.
I've seen nothing with Joanne Drew except this movie.
All right, let's just do Ben Johnson. Yeah, you're right. Johnson, he's in all kinds of stuff through the mid-90s. Yeah.
I've seen 10 Ben Johnson movies.
I've seen 8.
I've seen 17.
Yeah, okay. Jesus Christ. You win. It's okay, though, Kevin, because I did the homework film ahead of time to save time, and it's a good one, and it's totally appropriate for October.
Ooh.
It's Dracula, 1958, Terrence Fisher. Oh.
Hell yeah, I'm starring absolutely watching this.
Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee and Michael Goff.
Nice.
All right, this is a movie that I recommended to John once.
Oh, really?
It was like the first time we ever talked about movies.
Oh.
And it was when you were clearly feeling me out. you know, seeing kind of what I knew. We had been talking Buñuel. And then, and you were like, yeah, give me something that you watched like recently that you thought was awesome. And I went into this whole thing about the Terrence Fisher Dracula movies. And you were just like, I don't really like horror.
Yeah, I was probably like way out on that. I was like, dude, fucking Dracula from 1958, kill me.
It was basically just like, shut up, loser.
It's interesting. Terrence Fisher is like, what's the guy who did the Invisible Man remake, the one in like 2020? You know what I'm talking about? With what's her face from?
Who? That's the guy that he did. Lee Whannell. Oh, okay.
And he's also doing the he's doing Wolfman now. The new Wolfman movie, I believe. Yeah. And it's interesting. It's like Fisher is the same way. Like Fisher did like Dracula, The Mummy, Frankenstein, all these different.
It's all the Hammer horror films, which
we're
using like that same. I don't know if they like licensed from Universal or if.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know. I don't know what the deal was.
Well, I mean, Dracula.
Dracula wouldn't be Invisible Man.
Public domain
Mummy
at that point.
I don't know. I really don't. Yeah, but he did Frankenstein's.
Man of the Opera, Jekyll and Hyde. All of them.
Terrence Fisher made a bunch. I mean, like these Hammer movies they vary so wildly in quality. Mm-hmm. Some are really fun and some are like total slogs, but they're also all like 75 to 85 minutes.
Yeah, I'm way in, dude. Dracula is 82 minutes long and, I'm way in. I just rewatched Star Wars, and Peter Cushing is ridiculous in that movie, so I'm anxious to see other things with Peter Cushing also.
Well, there's one. Oh, The Devil. I think if you watch Dracula and you like it, and you want to get one with more Christopher Lee, check out The Devil Rides Out. I think that's my favorite of those Hammer horror movies.
Okay.
I bet all of these are like, well, maybe they're not. I was going to say, I bet they're all easily, readily available. They're probably all on YouTube, but.
The Devil Rides Out is on my watch list already for some reason. Cool. I don't remember adding it, but maybe it seems like the Film Junk guys have seen it, so maybe I heard about it on there. They talk about Hammer sometimes. All right, cool. Well, that's what we'll be watching next time for our homework is Dracula 1958, directed by Terrence Fisher.
Nice.
Do you got a number for us yet, JR, about how many, what's your top director?
Oh, you missed it. I said it already.
Oh, you said it? Who was it?
I mean, I think the top one is Michael Curtiz, but it's...
Oh, it was Curtiz? Okay.
87.
87, Jesus.
Oh, I forgot I could like actually look at that in my profile, like the stats.
Yeah. That's what I thought you were doing.
No, I just like search for Michael Curtiz. How do you get to your stats?
You just go to your thing, your menu, drop down menu, and say stats, the bottom one, before settings. My most seen director is
Scorsese,
of course. 32. Okay. 32 films by Scorsese.
Yeah. That's probably mine too.
And then next on the list, Soderbergh. 28.
Stats aren't working. Why aren't my stats working? Load up.
It just feels weird because I don't feel like I've seen that many Soderbergh movies, but I guess I have. I feel kind of bad because these are all white guys and they're men. So that's kind of unfortunate.
I mean,
Spike Lee is in my top 20, but I've seen 17 of his.
Yeah. 87 from Curtiz, 72 from Godard, 63 from Ford, and 62 from Herzog.
62 from Herzog?
I don't even,
Christ, man. I've seen 28 Herzog. That's crazy. 62.
My first non-white guy is Johnny Toe. It's a lot of white dudes.
Yeah man.
Really
weird,
old.
Right?
Yeah. Really old, mostly dead white dudes.
Yeah, I think Scorsese would actually be my number two, and number one would be Kurosawa for, 30.
This is really
cool. Why can't I find him?
You can look up. You can look at your most watched writers, your most watched cinematographers. Like my most watched writer is David Mamet.
But do you guys have this? I have most watched co-directors.
Yeah, me too. Who's yours?
I don't have that.
Agnes Hrinitsky, which I have no idea. Like I reckon, like Lee Unkrich co-directed some, like three from Lee Unkrich. He did some like Pixar co-directed.
Yeah, he's my number one one.
Okay, so Agnes
Finding Nemo, Monsters Inc., and Toy Story 2.
Really, Agnes Hrinitsky is co-director on several Bela Tarr films, like Requests for Harmonies and The Turin Horse.
Interesting. Oh, right. No, that's his wife, right? Doesn't he co-direct with his wife?
He gets
all the credit? You didn't know that?
I mean, maybe I forgot. I have no idea.
My most watched editor is Spielberg's editor, Michael Kahn.
Same.
Strange. Anyway, sorry, we're getting off on a wild tangent here.
Yeah.
My most watched executive producers are the Weinstein Bros.
Yikes. Look out. Moving on.
My third one's Stan Lee. I got a juice Stan Lee.
All right, Kevin, you want to talk about Good Morning?
Let's talk about Good Morning.
This is our homework from last week. We had to watch Yoshijiro Ozu's Good Morning from 1959. This is my third Ozu film. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not a huge fan of Ozu. I've seen Early and Late Spring. I didn't love either one of them.
I thought you only watched the wrong one.
I watched Early Spring. I have Late Spring as being watched, and I gave it 2 stars. I don't know when this happened. I don't remember watching. Oh, I'll show your activity. Hang on. February 5th of last year, apparently, I watched this movie.
I don't know. I think I sold this last week as like, if there's going to be an Ozu movie that is okay, it's going to be the 90-minute one that is like friendly. But I bet I'm wrong. You probably hated this too.
Well,
I mean, he gave it a 3.5, and I gave it a 3.
Didn't hate it. Oh, shit. Hated, okay, cool.
Definitely, I can't get to like the unrestrained like adoration of this movie that a lot of people that I know seem to have for it. I don't really get it. And maybe it's just because like I feel like I'm too cynical for this movie. Like, and also like, because I'm immediately like, when they buy the TV for the kids at the end, I'm just like, why the fuck would you buy these kids this TV? They're assholes. Like they threw a tantrum and you gave into their tantrum. Like, what are you thinking about?
You know, and it just seems
I kept waiting for there to be nothing in the box because they don't ever set the TV up. And I'm like, watch the, like, because there's a shot with the box in the hallway and then the mother walks in. And I was like, watch her just pick the box up like it's no big deal because it's fucking empty and they're just fucking with the kids. And then one of the last things is the kids telling the mother, not asking, telling her, have the TV set up by the time we get back from school. Like, what? Who are these kids? They're pieces of shit, you know?
Soft-ass parenting has been around for a long time. It's not just a current thing.
The
father seemed pretty hardcore when he got demonstrative, but they weren't afraid of him, so I don't know.
No, I mean, yeah. I thought the movie was, like, cute, and I thought, you know, like I genuinely, like, you know, chuckled at a lot of moments in it, but, like, I don't know, like, it's one of these where, like, I understand, like, you know, like, obviously, you know, Japanese movies can't all be samurai movies. They can't all be, you know, about deeper, you know, mystical things. Sometimes you just explore, like, you know, regular people's lives. But, like, I feel like Kurosawa did that better. I think Kobayashi did it better. I mean, yeah, I haven't seen Tokyo Story. I haven't, you know, so, but like, I don't, like, the whole thing about like, oh, you know, like, we thought, you know, you put your dues in, didn't you? Yeah. Well, did you see such and such got a washing machine? And it's like, these heady, like, y'all survived the apocalypse twice. Your country did not recover. Like, there were people in, there were like soldiers in like South Pacific Islands who didn't get back to Japan for 2 years. The economy was shit. Everything was horrible. And y'all are still gonna like, oh, such and such got a washing machine. Oh.
Well, it's like, just like suburban gossip, right? I mean,
I get it, but like, there's like so many other like more important things that could be going on.
I guess. I mean, the whole, I feel like that's like a, I don't know. I don't know how fair that is. This is like 15 years after all that happened, and like these people aren't necessarily.
Japan still hadn't recovered.
Yeah, but I'm just, well, these people aren't living. They're not living in Nagasaki. I mean, like,
you think
Ozu is writing this movie? He's writing it as a reflection of that time. You think this is fantasy? Like that people weren't having suburban sort of squabbles like this?
I guess. I don't know. Like well, I was thinking,
your problems
like,
become your problems, even though there are obviously greater things happening. But the, and also like, Ozu spent plenty of time dealing very directly with the war in terms of like how it affected families. Maybe this old guy just needed a break.
I guess.
And he's,
I thought
and
the
families
are
allowed to gossip.
I thought the little brother was adorable, and when he says "I love you" in English all the time, like that's really funny and cute. Yeah. Not funny like haha, but it's just like it made me smile.
Yeah, and the whole thing where they're like, you know, like. Here, tap my forehead. Tap it again.
I don't know about there's like a lot of farting in this movie. And yes. I mean, I remember hearing that there was like fart jokes in this movie.
Mm.
Maybe from Jordan's review or something. But it's like there are a lot of farting scenes in this, and like I don't know. It's just really strange. Because, like, I didn't find it funny when people fart in this movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, just in life. And I was like, well, that's you.
No, I think yeah. I think farts can certainly be amusing. But, like, in this movie, like, this game that they play where they touch their foreheads and fart, I don't know what that is. Like, I guess it's, like, pull my finger or something, their version of that. And then, like, the father character who farts and the woman thinks that he's talking to her. Like, I didn't even get that. Like, I don't even, that's a bit of a stretch, man. Like, I don't know. Yeah. And as far as the rest, like, I didn't, you know, but whatever, that's fine. I did like the part at the end when they were exercising on the hill and he was farting and he was like, you work for the gas company. I thought that was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I thought was interesting is the fact that the kids stop talking at one point, like that's the tantrum they're throwing. They stop talking and it causes these issues where the mothers start thinking things about each other based on how the children are acting. And they have no idea why the children are acting that way, but they think it's because of how the children's mother thinks about them and that sort of thing. And it just reminded me of like a sitcom. It feels very like sitcom-y, like how a 90s sitcom would deal with. There'd be like an episode where the kids stopped talking and it would cause all these problems with the adults.
Yeah, this is definitely like a King of Queens episode.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if they
have kids. They don't have any kids in show. But something like that. You know, like Everybody Loves Raymond.
The Belushi one.
Is there a Belushi one?
What?
Jim Belushi?
Yeah, he had some.
Oh, I don't know.
You don't remember
he
that
had
show?
Some show.
You guys love sitcoms. I don't have any idea.
I mean, they were on in my
home. I only watch Frasier, bud. Frasier only.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of similar to a Frasier setup where like somebody says something at the beginning, it's gets misconstrued, and then that runs through the end of the episode until like, oh no, I meant this.
Yeah, and like that dynamic definitely made me think of like sitcoms, but you know, aside from that, I think it's really I like Ozu's style. I like the static shots a lot actually, and I think working in color it looks really nice. And yeah, maybe like all those things are what sort of elevates it above something like Late Spring for me, which I just found incredibly dull. But you know,
don't know. If I watched it again, I might not be as harsh as I was.
See, it all has to do with like with the mood that you're in when you're watching stuff too. It's like,
oh yeah.
Like, I mean, if I watch this on a different day when I'm like, I really want to watch something fast paced and exciting, and then I have to watch this, like, I'd hate this more because I'd resent it.
Mm.
I want to be watching something better.
Blitzkrieg is such a tougher hang because like, it's dealing with like a conflict that makes just like no sense to an American viewer. Like the whole, like, I want to stay with my dad. Like, it just, it makes no sense. It does not translate. I understand the emotions in it. I really like the craft of it and the performances, but those, it's like as foreign as a foreign film can be.
Fair. Yeah. Maybe that's why it didn't work for me. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Well, TR.
Oh, yeah. Did I watch stuff? I did watch stuff. Let's go with Wolves. Wolves with an F.
You would watch this.
Anyone else watch this?
I'd rather be dead, dude. I will never watch this movie.
Well, I watched that other forgettable Apple movie with the rest of the Ocean's 11 guys.
I would rather watch Wolves than watch that. That movie looked really bad.
I gotta tell you, man, that other movie that I forgot the name of already.
The Instigators.
The Instigators. I thought it was better. No. Better because it is, like, funnier. And I think that if this is what Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are trying to do, just, like make these, like, movies where you put, like, so much money into, like, the actors getting paid, but then, like, you're basically just trying to, like, write one draft of a script and be done with it, like... This is not going to work. This is not a good plan for like a production company. Just because like the problem with the Instigators is like the beginning is cool. Like the setup is cool and there's funny stuff that happens throughout. And then the movie just like fizzles out into nothing. And with Wolves, it's like we've got a team up of like two stars that people like actively want to see together. You know, Brad Pitt and George Clooney, like this should be like a huge deal. And that doesn't mean that the movie itself has to be huge, but it does mean that you should probably get someone really smart like Steven Soderbergh to make sure that it's tight as fuck and actually like entertaining. Right. Cause, these two fixers who end up like working the same job through like this, like ridiculous miscommunication, like it is not that. It's like, it is not funny. There are not laugh lines. It felt like, even though like George Clooney and Brad Pitt are clearly like in the same room filming these scenes together, it's like they are not on the same page with like how we are playing these parts. Like the energies just are not correct. And it's... The way that plays out, like, this is, like, it's too tidy. It's like we're in this single location fixing this problem. We move into a car with a new problem. We move into this sort of, like, wider area where we've got, like, a mob issue. And it just, each, like, 30-minute segment or maybe, like, 35-minute segment is just, like, it's like, okay, I see how this is going to end. I know where this is going to go next. Okay, I see how we're going to, like, it's just, it's predictable. It's dumb and it's not funny. And it also just like looks like digital trash, which is not forgivable when the rest of your movie sucks. And I gave this 2.5 out of 5, and I'm thinking of it as worse than that. Right? I don't know what kind of good mood I was in.
You were bowled over by just the beauty of Clooney and Pitt aging like fine wine, you know.
And the ending is like maybe the worst part, because as this goes, like, I don't know why they felt the need to like sort of add in this like extra layer of intrigue and conspiracy with these two guys. But like the only times they come up, it's like where George Clooney's basically like, all right, let's stop and let's have a very specific conversation about how we could be like related and like, or like through work, not like related through like family. It's like, okay, great. So that's going to matter at the end somehow. And lo and behold, we think the movie's over. They drop a kid off at Richard Kind's house. And all of a sudden, we have another layer of just dumb thing happening that does technically set up a sequel, which, I mean, they have, Apple has confirmed is happening, but it's definitely not happening. Right? That was like the press release.
What? Like, hey,
remember, they were like, we've moved your movie out of theaters and straight to streaming, but you'll get a sequel. That's like...
You don't think there's going to be a sequel?
No, fuck no.
Why?
I think that's like a, hey, we're still friends. No, I think this is just going to like sit in development hell. Like, John Watts is going to be just writing a script for 5 years while also working on other movies.
I don't know, man. I could tell. Clooney's got nothing going on. I could totally see him doing
Clooney
a sequel to this.
Is directing like 2 movies a year. What are you talking about?
Yeah, for Netflix that literally no one watches. And then he did that garbage with Julia Roberts that nobody saw.
Are you
last
that movie?
Year.
What?
Yeah,
sorry.
Right?
People did see, that was a like they, extremely successful rom com.
Are you fucking
the
kidding?
Only successful rom com release in theaters in like 15 years.
Extremely successful.
Made like $200 million.
You're out of your mind, dude. There's no way that's true. I'm gonna look it up right now. Fuck
I'm
off.
Looking it up faster.
No, let me look it up.
I mean, that's really slow.
What if you find the name so we can see it on Cinematrix at some point?
I want to find the
paradise
so that if I'm right, so if I'm wrong, I can just ignore it.
All right, I overshot it. It was 168.
168 worldwide?
Yeah.
Oh, what a fucking hit, JR. Give me a fucking break, dude.
Like, no rom-com has made anything close to that in so long. And
really? How about Crazy Rich Asians? What did Crazy Rich Asians make?
More.
Oh, okay. No rom-com, eh?
Anyway, whatever.
Now he wants to change the subject.
People did see tickets, right?
$239 million for Crazy Rich Asians, bro. That's a rom-com. Fuck off. And it doesn't even have any big stars in it except Keanu.
Okay, so why were we talking about that?
I have
no
idea.
George Clooney's got nothing going on.
Oh, yeah, he's got nothing going on.
That's... Whatever. If George Clooney and Brett decide it's going to happen, then it'll happen. But I don't mean to
prolong this because it's completely irrelevant. But tell me that if George Clooney had done a movie with Julia Roberts, a rom-com, in 2002, that it wouldn't have grossed $500 million worldwide.
Well, okay? No, I mean, it probably
that's
still would have grossed around 200 million, but it would have been made for like 20 million. Like,
no, I'm just no. It would have been more successful back then. Are you kidding? These guys aren't big stars anymore. They're not the draws that they used to be.
I agree. I just
like nobody cares about Julia Roberts. She's over.
What did The Perfect Storm make?
What? That was a failure. The Perfect Storm was a failure, wasn't it?
It made $328 million.
Oh, really? I thought it was like
it cost tank. So
yeah,
it cost
right?
$120 million.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, Clooney had some huge hits, like Ocean's 11. Ocean's 11 was a big hit. Spawn 2 sequels, you know? I mean, he's been in some big movies. I'm just, he's a huge movie star. I just don't think he's a huge movie star anymore. Like, he's not a big deal anymore. Brad Pitt is the reason you're going to watch Wolfs, honestly. Like, he's a big star still. And he's on his way out, too.
Look, sure. And that's...
They're getting old.
And look, Apple was probably smart to move this to streaming. Like, I don't know who would have gone to see this, and like the people that would have probably wouldn't have been very happy with it. And that is, you know, bummer for them. Bummer, but it's like, this just seemed like a, hey, Apple, like you're investing all this money into these stars. You've got like your hit director, guy who directed all those $1 billion grossing Spider-Man movies. Like, why can't we just put a little bit more money into like making this a little bit better? I don't get it. I don't get it.
I get it because people who want to watch it aren't you. They don't give a shit about how good it is. They want to see it because it's like, oh, baby, this new movie with Brad Pitt and George Clooney. I love Ocean's 11. I'm going to watch that. It was okay. It was pretty good, actually. I think it was all right.
Yeah. Well, this is like, go written by John Watts. Okay. Hey, maybe John Watts is not a writer. Stick to directing Spider-Man, John Watts.
Going back to his roots with that cop car movie he did, he wants to make another indie classic with two of the biggest stars on the planet. There used to be the biggest stars on the planet.
What?
Anyway.
What cop car movie?
He made a movie called Cop Car. This is his first movie. Before he did...
Wait, that's not like the...
Cop Car with Kevin Bacon from 2015.
Yeah, I remember this.
You don't remember
Kevin
that?
Smith do a cop car movie?
Oh, he did Cop
Out.
Cop
Out.
Okay.
This movie is like a thriller. It's about kids who find a cop car, and then like the guy who is the cop is like turns out to be like a criminal, and he wants to kill them. I don't know. Anyway, Kevin, you got something?
Yeah, I watched Kinds of Kindness, the new Lanthimos film. Mm-hmm. You guys probably already know it's three stories. All kind of loosely connected, and Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone and Willem Dafoe and Margaret Qualley, they all play like different characters in each of them, and there's all like varying levels of weirdness to them. A lot of atonal piano music, so it's like kind of going back to, I guess, some of Lanthimos's, I don't know, maybe his, like, more noted things, like Sacred Deer and all that. It's weird. It's, a lot of weird sexual stuff. Yeah, a lot of interesting relationship dynamics.
How's Plemons in it?
I think he's good. He's very like if it the funny thing is like half the time like if I like just heard his voice I was like, why am I watching a Matt Damon movie? But then it's like, oh no, it's actually Jesse Plemons. So, but yeah. The runtime kind of drags it a little bit, but
it's like 3 hours, right?
Yeah, it's like 2:45.
Mm.
But you do get to see Hunter Schafer in all her glory,
mm-hmm.
and like she could probably give Sydney Sweeney a run for her money.
What are we talking about here? Are you talking about her butt?
What's going on?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
I see. That's okay.
We're just going to let that sit there.
Totally. That's fine.
No, that's fair. I mean, you see all that in Euphoria also. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yeah, so it's nothing new for John, but.
Sure.
Been
there, done that.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Still talking about Kinds of Kindness?
Yeah.
Talking about Hunter Schafer and Kinds of Kindness.
Yeah.
Apparently does some nude work.
Yeah, there's a part where like Emma Stone's character is like, they're looking for someone who can like raise the dead. And they're like, she's doing like this medical exam on Hunter Schafer. And like part of it is measuring between her nipples and like the distance from one of her nipples to her navel. And she pronounces it as perfect. And you guys will have to watch the movie to see if Hunter Schafer is the one who actually brings the person back from the dead. But
I am going to watch this
movie. Don't spoil. Yeah, I'm going to.
I'm like a little mad at myself for not having seen it yet.
I'm not. It's too fucking long. Honestly, if it were like if it were this long and it were a normal. Like, not a triptych like it is. Like, the triptych thing is what scares me away from it more than anything. Mm. If it were just, like, a normal film. And the fact that he made it, it feels like it's really soon after Poor Things.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, if not shot concurrently, it must have been shot, like, right after.
Yeah, they were like back to back.
I assume this is like a much lower budget thing happening too, but I don't.
Well, yeah.
I'm assuming a lot. I don't know anything about this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they didn't have, you know, a huge budget for it, and apparently it only took them like a few weeks to shoot it. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. It's definitely not as good as The Favorite or Poor Things. And yeah, like the kind of disjointedness is, you know, kind of takes away from it for me, but, you know, like I said, you guys might get more out of it than I did.
He's got another one next year.
Oh yeah.
What's his another one? What's the next one?
Bugonia with Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone.
Yeah, they're all with Emma Stone now, dude. It's his lady.
That's right.
I mean,
that's his Leonardo DiCaprio.
She might be like, this is my guy.
Yeah, sure. Well, she's, you know, got her Oscars.
Keep giving me Oscars.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least nominations.
Yeah.
Luca's making fast work too. He did Challengers, and now he's got Queer coming out, you know? These big directors
he's
coming out with stuff quick.
I mean, it wasn't Bones and All, that was 2022, right?
That was
And Challengers was supposed to be 2023, but got bumped to this year with the strike. So he's doing like one per year, and accidentally two in 1 year. That guy needs to calm down. You know, maybe if he took a little bit more time, we'd increase that hit rate.
Increase the hit for Luca?
Yeah,
Luca's got nothing but hits under his belt, my guy, okay?
Yeah,
you could name a bad movie Luca's made. And don't try. Don't try. Stop.
Okay. I don't know. Like, do you like a bigger splash? I really don't like a bigger splash.
I've never seen a bigger splash, but
that's the only one that I like. I do not like, but I was disappointed by Suspiria for sure.
I was not. Suspiria is better than the original. Anyway, I mean, I'm not a, you know, I don't care about.
You don't like horror. You don't
Argento and speaking of horror and Hunter Schafer, I watched Cuckoo.
That's why I know that name. Okay.
And directed by Tillman Singer, who is not someone I was aware of before this, but this is a horror film about a teenage girl who moves with her family to Germany because her dad is like an architect, I think, and they're like building a sort of like medical center for this guy played by Dan Stevens, Herr Koenig, and Dan Stevens is great in this as the sort of calm, quiet, villainous Herr Koenig. And she moves there with her family, and then really bizarre things start to happen, and sort of becomes like a slasher situation. And I was waiting for there to be a really goofy twist that I thought that they were preparing us for, and it never came, which I was really happy about. The way that the slasher is shot is very, what's that movie? Dress to Kill? De Palma, you know? So I was waiting for it to be a Dress to Kill situation, if you guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I thought Dan Stevens was going to be that person, but he wasn't, thank God. And Hunter Schafer is wonderful in this as the sort of person, you know, she's got the whole situation where like she knows something's wrong, but nobody believes her because she's like a sort of spastic outcast in her family, black sheep, and just ratchet up the tension until the end. And it's just a pretty solid little thriller, and it's shot really well. It looks really nice. It's got this weird, like, sort of 80s aesthetic, 80s European aesthetic, like everything's beige. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it's not in the 80s at all. It's like she has a smartphone, so it's not in the 80s, but it definitely feels that way. And I just enjoyed it. It was fun, so check it out. Cuckoo.
Nice.
You hate when I use that word.
What, check it out?
No, fun.
Well, this one was fun, sorry. It's because the movies you think are fun are garbage, but this one is good.
It's like if I use the word fun, you're like, you clock, you check out. You're like, no, it's bad.
Because I just remember you calling the Fast and Furious movies fun. So they are not. They're a bore. So a slog, sloggy bores. Not that I've seen any of them, but you know.
Okay. There it is.
Anyway, JR.
Yeah. You know, all this talk about fun. I watched a 4-hour Chinese movie. Because, you know, I'm like hanging out with my cute little 3-month-old, and I was like, what can we do together? And it turns out this week that was like, I can watch Ripley and I can watch movies on my Criterion challenge that I have for this year, because I'm still doing that. So I watched An Elephant Sitting Still, which came out, you know, roughly 5 years ago, and was like, unfortunately, like, part of, not like the marketing of it, but just like part of the narrative around it was like, it is this extremely like sad and upsetting film with all these characters in a like a cold industrial city in China. And the director of this film was like a young director, took his own life like after, like before he finished editing it. So it's just like this like shadow cast over this whole enterprise, and I honestly don't know why I decided this is how I should spend my time, because I knew going in, like, it is supposed to be just like the worst time. Like, it is 4 hours of misery, and that is typically something that I hate, especially if I get the sense that it's like misery for misery's sake. I think this is a little bit better. This is better than Misery for Misery's Sake, even though if you wanted to call it that, you would, it's earned it. But I think like there is a repetitive nature, along with the 4-hour runtime, that is like just hitting you so hard with some stuff that, just elevates it. And I don't know, it's not great, because it's hard to like separate it from like some of the stuff that happens is like, this is like an American like daytime soap opera level of just like absurdity, but like played so straight and dark. So I don't recommend this. Don't ever watch this. You'll never watch it. It's 4 hours, but it is good and depressing. It also looks really good. Which I wasn't expecting.
You're right. I will never watch this. It's too long.
I got my next one lined up is a Happy Hour from the Drive My Car guy.
Oh.
That one's only 5 hours, so.
All right. Kevin?
JR, would you like to discuss La
Chimera?
Well, apparently it's actually pronounced Chimera. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
This is according to Stephen Fry, so.
I'm not there. I mean.
Anyway.
I'm going, yeah. C-H-I in Italian is key, so I'm just doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not fucking with it. Let's do the Italian Indiana Jones movie. Let's do that one.
Yes. So we've got Josh O'Connor as some dude, and he and his Italian buddies are grave robbers, essentially.
He's dragged back in, you know.
When he thought he was out, they pulled him back in.
He thought he was out of prison.
That's right. Well, yeah. I mean, the first time you see him, he's out. He's out of prison, and he's on a train back to where his girlfriend's mom lives. And throughout the movie, like, she's maybe missing, maybe dead. We don't really know. And the ending is kind of cryptic. And anyway, so I thought this movie was good, but I don't know. It was fun to see them, like, you know, like going to, like, you know, like these different like places and like finding the Etruscan artifacts and, yeah. you know, just being a fun gang hanging out and doing stuff. But like, I feel like by the end of it, you don't really know any more about Josh O'Connor's character. You don't really know that much more about any of them. And by the time you get to it, like, so I don't think this will spoil anything for John, but like,
he's not gonna watch it.
Okay.
I'm going to watch it.
Okay.
I have other things to do. Sorry. I had to watch Good Morning this morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
So JR, so they find the artifact and it's taken from them, and then they're confronting their boss, who they just then meet in person.
Mm-hmm.
When did you know that he was going to throw the thing off the side of the boat?
Oh,
because I knew it like as soon as he started tuning their voices out, it's like, okay, well, that's going to happen.
Yeah. In our, are you thinking of Alba Rohrwacher as the boss? Isn't
yes.
she like the boss of the rival gang?
Where's all that static?
Someone
from?
Turn on a jet ski or something.
Sorry, I had to turn on my my fan.
Oh,
sorry.
Wasn't she the boss of the rival gang?
Yes.
The guys who.
Well, like, she's okay. the one that, like, they're selling all the stuff to, and, you know, the one who's like, you know, like, oh no, these aren't important artifacts. These are just everyday people's, you know, stuff.
Right.
So why should I care? But, yeah. Speaking of Alba Rohrwacher, check out our old episode on Hungry Hearts with her and Adam Driver. Anyway. So, like, the movie goes on, and, like, I don't know, like, it's a fun hang, but, like, I don't think you really get anything out of it more than a fun hang.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you get some random craft work in the mix, in the soundtrack, and that was fun. But, like, other than that, it's, like, it's fine.
Yeah, I think that... Yeah, the Josh O'Connor, like, arc just kind of played cold to me because, you know, that scene where he throws over the thing, it's like, I still am not clear, like, is this guy in it for the money? Like, or is he in it for the camaraderie? Like, I just don't know. Like, is he just sucked back into this because he's, like, good at it and he can do the thing with the stick? Like, I'm never sure. And I'm still not sure at the end. Was this all just, like, a way to, like, try and find his lost girlfriend? I'm not sure. Do think that I'd be more okay with the film and not knowing about him if it, like, excised the 40 minutes that are related to the girlfriend and the girlfriend's family. It's not like all those scenes are bad, like with Isabella Rossellini and I think it's Carol Duarte, who plays Italia. I just thought those scenes were like they added a mess to a movie that is already like trying to be a mess, and it's too much mess, right? And like there's like the moment where I think this is after he throws the head over, like he goes back and like Italia's been kicked out of the house.
Yeah,
and along with all the kids that she's been hiding, and I was like, What is happening?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's probably like something like important about her. She's named after the country.
Yeah,
that's probably important. That's probably symbolic. But I am not going to pretend to get that at all. So there's that. It's like what I am perceiving as a mess is probably just stuff, social commentary, political commentary for Italy that I am not. I'm just not getting. I'm not picking it up.
Yeah,
because I have no context for it.
Yeah, me neither.
So yeah, I don't know. This and for being like 2 hours and 10 minutes, you're right. Pleasant hang.
Yeah.
Josh O'Connor is good.
Yeah, he's good. It's just the character is like just you don't really. It's like whatever, man.
But you know, I think we're at like a place with this and Challengers where it's like, hey, if Josh O'Connor's on screen, it's a captivating presence, and we're just good with it.
Yeah.
Josh O'Connor, be on screen.
That's right.
Hungry Hearts is episode 91, by the way. Nice. On the Filmiac podcast.
Can't wait for old Joshy in the next Knives Out film.
Ugh. is he actually in that?
Yeah, he was just recently cast in it.
Oh my god. So I watched the Crow remake. Dead man. Sorry. Speaking of waking up a dead man, I watched the Crow remake by Rupert Sanders, the guy who did the Ghost in the Shell, Americanized Ghost in the Shell film.
Oh, yeah.
And Snow White and the Huntsman, which I remember liking Snow White and the Huntsman a little bit. The Ghost in the Shell movie was not good. But this movie, oh, and apparently, oh, God. Oh, this is, oh, he did a short film about Black Hole, like Charles Burns. That's weird.
I've read that.
I thought he was. I thought this was like a feature that he was working on. Anyway, yeah. So The Crow is. Hey, look, it's a lot of fun. It's you know, it looks nicer than I expected it to look, being that it's, you know, there's a lot of CG like gunfire in this movie because apparently they banned actual guns from set. As a tribute to Brandon Lee. And there are a lot of things wrong with this
probably
movie.
Probably not a bad idea.
No, totally. There's a lot of things wrong with this movie. Like, I think Skarsgård's a little bit miscast here as the Eric of the film. His name is not Eric Draven, it's just Eric. And I think FKA Twigs is miscast because she's not an actor and she's awful in this. But she does get a chance to sing like this horribly, you know, like, you know, melodramatic over soulful song at one point, and it's ridiculous. And but you know, those are sort of minor things. I think the action in the movie is like really decent. The villain played by Danny Houston kind of rocks, to be honest. Like, he's got this whole deal with the devil thing going on.
To believe, like, better than Danny Houston experience for the past 15 years has not been great.
Oh, you don't like Danny Houston?
I'm not saying I've never liked
Danny Houston.
I mean, Danny Houston's been doing, like, he's just been getting like these bad guy menacing roles
for
most of the century, and
I think he's good in The Proposition, he's good in Birth, he's good in 30 Days a Night.
Okay, but then, like, we go to Wonder Woman.
Edge of Darkness? I don't...
Clash of Titans and, like, these...
Oh, well, I mean, X-Men's, everybody sucks
X-Men
in Clash
Origins, Wolverine.
I don't know if he's
the bad guy in 30 Days a Night.
He's Stryker, and, yeah, he's the main vampire in 30 Days a Night. He's good.
He's got a lane, and it's often in not great movies.
I could agree with you with that, and I wouldn't say The Crow is a great movie, but it's very watchable and entertaining, and it has some cool ideas.
Oh, Horizon. Horizon.
Unfortunately, won't get expanded upon because this movie, you know, tanked hard, and they'll never get a sequel. But
no,
hopefully, I don't know. I'd like to see Rupert Sanders do some more like hard R violence stuff because I think he does a pretty good job with it in this.
What's up with Bill Skarsgård's year? Right? It's like, this is the second, like, tanked action movie in a row.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess he just wanted to do, like action, and he just signed up for all these different movies.
I mean, hopefully, like, I kind of hope for our boy's sake that people go see Nosferatu. Not Bill Skarsgård's sake, for
1,000%.
Sake, but
yeah, I hope it's good. Sorry, and there's also a between the living and the dead world section in this movie. That's sort of interesting, like the way it's visualized.
Okay.
And there's like a guide in that section, who's played by Sami Bouajila. I don't know, who's like a French-Tunisian actor. I don't know, but he's really good. He was apparently in The Siege. I don't remember him in that, but he's really solid in those parts, and I enjoyed those sections also. So, yeah, it's just a better movie than it gets credit for, maybe, and I think people can't see that yet, and it'll probably happen. It'll probably become like a minor cult classic in the decades to come.
Hey, maybe Boy Kills World will as well.
Possibly.
Maybe this is like Skarsgård's best year ever. It's just misunderstood. I don't know. When this is on streaming, I'll probably watch both Crow films, just since I've never devoted much time or attention to the original. And I'm
the original is a masterpiece. I rewatched the original. It's so good.
You talked about it. I remember. Like I want to love it, so I'm going to watch it. Mm. All right. Is he done?
I'm out, so.
Yeah, I'm out too. John picked the worst time to walk away. But, I don't know, Kevin, are you going to watch this Crow remake?
I doubt it.
You've got feelings about The Crow?
I mean, I love the original, and, but I mean, I don't know, I just... New movies, man, I don't know. I mean...
Wait, you watch Kinds of Kindness, and you're like, I'm done. I'm done with new films.
Well, that was Yorgos Lanthimos. I don't know. Random remakes by random people that I don't know with, you know, just I have nothing against Bill Skarsgård, but I've got nothing for him either.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like I'm waiting for the Phoenician Scheme. Wes Anderson's next movie.
Yeah. Why? Okay, so new films. Why did you watch La Chimera? Like, what put you on that?
Because I saw Challengers, and I saw, and I liked Josh O'Connor. And I thought
it was that simple. All right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought it would be interesting to see, you know, like a different perspective. You know, I hadn't seen any Rohrabacher movies, so
yeah, and that's it's like that was one of those movies that was like on the festival circuit in the fall last year, it was acclaimed, and I have seen an Alice Rohrabacher film or a couple few, and I've not loved them, but the I guess the Josh O'Connor of it all made it more appealing to me.
Yeah.
And I'd heard that was lighter fare than some of her more recent stuff. And it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like I don't know why I feel compelled to watch like new crap like The Crow. And to be clear, like John liked this film. John, we know you liked this film. Very few people have enjoyed this. So it's like I don't expect anything from it, and maybe that will make it a pleasant surprise, but again, I don't like I'll probably one day also watch Boy Kills World just because I'll be on like this like apparently ridiculous like I don't know if it's like supposed to be John Wick or like even more like cartoon anime like style violence with live action Americans, but again, I'll just be browsing Hulu one day and I'll be like, I got nothing to do. I'm not going to watch anything serious. I'm going to put on this stupid action film and I'm probably going to hate it. Although H. John Benjamin is third build.
Oh, well, voice I mean, of there boy. We go.
So he's just a voice. Well, I guess to find out what that means, I'm going to have to watch it. Sorry, John. We got Charlton Copley in here, Famke Janssen, Michelle Dockery. Look at all these names that you haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, I'm in. All right. Talked myself into it. I was going to watch it anyway, but now I'm prioritizing it. All right, but yeah, Kevin, I'm out of films too. We've been abandoned, and I've got nothing to talk about. Did you watch Ripley on Netflix? Because I did watch a TV show for TV Yak.
I haven't. I mean, I would be interested in watching it at some point. I just finished rewatching Game of Thrones, and I saw the Mr. McMahon documentary, which was like, I've seen all this and I've heard all of it, so it's like it's kind of a waste of time.
Yeah,
but you know, at least I can, you know, say, oh well, I saw it, and yeah, it's nothing new.
I know I haven't heard like read a review or heard an unbiased opinion, but you know, I listened to some of the Bill Simmons content, and he wasn't like talking it up everywhere, but he is an executive producer, and he definitely had a conversation with one of his wrestling guys about it. It sounded interesting, but I don't know any of that stuff. And, you know, that's not my world. So I might watch that one day as like a, you know, just peek into the world of the WWE. But
yeah, sure.
I'd be going into it with a very different perspective.
Yeah.
Than you.
Well, it's a funny thing, too, because like most of the movie, most of the show, like they're referring to it like it was the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation. But like every time
that's how I was raised.
Yeah. But like every time they say WWF on the subtitles, it says WWE. And it's like, are y'all like buying into his rebranding? Because, you know, like the late 90s, early 2000s, they had the whole thing, you know, get the F out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was bizarre.
That's interesting. Yeah. And was that like, that's just like subtitles. Like, do you guys watch everything with subtitles on Netflix?
Just
this is like, this is actually like a type of television viewer now. Like my sister is like, I can't hear it if the subtitles aren't on.
Oh yeah.
And so like I'm watching more with subtitles now just because of like, you know, sleeping children. Volume can't be too loud. Like I get that. My sister does not have that problem. Like she's, you know, I mean, she's younger. She's got her hearing. Like she should be able to see what's happening and hear it, and not have to read.
Headphones are for, right?
Headphones?
Yeah. I mean, what? John's just like a black screen. She's taking a fucking nap. Anyway, so,
No, I'm sorry. I'm dealing with my kid here.
I figure. I'm just giving you shit. I'm sorry. Deal with your kid. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah. I don't know. Like, it's not quite as bad as it used to be. But like the audio on streaming used to be like really bad. Like it would like be so uneven, where like you would have to like, you know, constantly be turning it up or down because you couldn't hear what they're saying, and the sound effects would be louder than the talking, and the music would be, you know,
that's the problem.
All and, over the place.
And also it's like, you know, like these newer TVs, and like for the most part I've got like, you know, cheaper, you know, like flat screen TVs, and like those TVs like I think like look pretty good, but they're almost like designed for you to not use their speakers.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, hey, get a sound bar, bitch.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, they're garbage quality for the sound, I agree.
Yeah.
And the like we bought a soundbar, and it's, you know, it's not like an expensive, super nice soundbar or anything, but it's I need to like hook it up differently. It's hooked up through Bluetooth, and it drives me bonkers. Like the it'll like have like an echoing sound where it's like it's not like functionally turning off like the TV speaker to work.
Oh, so no.
It drives me crazy. And the only thing I've like looked up is like, make sure that the TV speaker is on mute before you turn the other thing on, and like that still doesn't fix it. So I gotta get rid of the Bluetooth and just hook it up with a wire like an adult. But anyway, I certainly, you know, commiserate with the sound issues.
Yeah.
Are you guys are all out?
Yes.
Yeah. We've just been.
Jesus Christ. Okay. I watched Megalopolis. This is the new Francis Ford Coppola film.
I was wondering if you're going to bring this up.
which, I mean, we can talk more about after one or both of you have seen it, but it's a mess, like everybody's saying. It's unfortunate. But, you know, I think Coppola sort of got lost in the message he was trying to, like, push with this. It's very, like, didactic, this movie. Like, he's got a really specific thing he's trying to say, and it's not a terribly interesting message. And yeah, it's just, it's not like I would have liked, I thought it was be interesting because he's so sort of like experimental now, in the last maybe 20 years or so, but this is I would have really preferred this, as like a more formal exercise, like a, you know, if he had made this in 80 instead of, One from the Heart, maybe. Not that One from the Heart's bad. I like that too. But this is, you know, this is just like, it looks gross.
Yeah.
It's very green screeny. Looks like, you know, episode 2.
Oh no.
Yeah. I mean, I'm nervous. The, you know, Twixt was a reclamation project for me, and I love it, but it's, what I'm hearing sounds not great.
It's not. Mm. There are things to like about this. I mean, like, I think Shia LaBeouf is really good in this. I think Adam Driver, what he's doing is, like, so, it's really strange. I mean, like, his performance is really strange. Aubrey Plaza's performance is really strange. Esposito is really weird. Like, and John Voight, like, I don't even know, dude. Don't get me started. Like, there's a scene with John Voight that is so ridiculous. I can't even begin to get into it. But I think LaBeouf is good, and a lot of the acting is, like, super, like, overacty, and I think, I mean, obviously they were asked to do this, like, they were pushed to do that for whatever reason, but I don't know, it doesn't work for me. There are some cool, like, shots and stuff in this, some cool imagery, but overall, yeah, I think it's a miss, and that's unfortunate, and it's unfortunate that it did so poorly, yeah, because I want Coppola to do more, but
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't, you know. I'm not gonna dig his grave. You know, it's like he could potentially decide to do some work for higher stuff.
Right.
He just hasn't been interested in doing that in so long.
Okay. Also, I rewatched The Fall, directed by Tarsim Singh.
Yeah.
This is the 4K remaster that's on Mubi right now, and yeah, I was worried that this is gonna be like a, like, because this is, like, one of my favorite films when I was a teen. Mm-hmm. Or I guess I was 20, actually, when it came out. But when I was a young man, younger. And I was afraid it would sort of, like, fall off. But, yeah, it very, very good still. And actually went up half a star for me on this rewatch. And to a full 5. And it got me. I cried at the end. At a part I've never cried before at, which is the very ending, like the very last sequence of images, which are all from silent slapstick comedy films. But it's got, like, the little girl, Kantinka Untaru, who plays Alexandria, she's narrating over it. And it's just this very touching sequence where she thinks that everybody in all movies who do stunts are Roy, Lee Pace's character. And it's just really, like, this, the naivete just got me. I don't know. I was bawling my eyes out, man. I don't know. It was great. And Lee Pace is awesome in this, and Kantinka Untaru is amazing. And there was something else that I never got before in this movie until now, which is when he starts the story, he says all these guys are on an island, and then there's an Indian who's swimming, the Indian with a bandaged thigh, who's swimming to the island. And then he gets to the island, and every time Lee Pace talks about the Indian character, he uses, like, Native American terminology. He says, like, his wigwam and his squaw. But anytime you see the Indian, it's a guy from India.
Yeah.
And it's because you're seeing her understanding of Indian. She knows what an Indian is because she's from Romania or whatever. And she doesn't know about Native Americans. I thought that was a really interesting idea that I'd never put together before.
It's
fun.
Yeah.
It's a great, great film. Very, obviously, I mean, you know, the visuals are great. And I think that people who don't like this movie say that it's, you know, style over substance, but that's like the same critique you get from any movie that has style. It's style over substance, you know, but it's like this movie has substance. I don't know. It's doing a lot. It's very emotional. I mean,
it works. I think you could make that criticism of Tar Sims' other movies, maybe, but not this one.
Yeah, fair. I mean, although I like The Cell, but, you know, but The Cell is also like, I wouldn't say The Cell has a lot of substance. It is just like a thriller, essentially, but.
Yeah.
But I do like it. But yeah, Tarsem, I don't know. Tarsem's another guy, dude, who's fallen off. Like, what's this fucking guy doing?
Well, I mean, after The Fall, he did Immortals and Mirror Mirror, and that was like it.
Immortals sucked.
But no, Immortals was bad, and Mirror Mirror looked really bad.
Yeah, I'm sure it's bad. It's got.
He did a TV series in 2017, Emerald City.
He also did another movie, like, in 2020 or 2023 called Dear Jassy, which takes place in 1996 in Punjab, but I don't know.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I don't know. Anyway, that's, I mean, I was going to talk about this movie, The Forsaken, that I watched, but I don't have to. It's not that big of a deal. I enjoyed it. It's just a forgotten horror movie from 2001. It's a vampire movie.
Is that the I lost her name. She's in Chloe.
No, nobody's in this that you know.
Okay.
Except Simon Rex is in this from Red Rocket. Oh my god. Julianne Moore?
Yes, thank you.
No,
Jesus.
She is not in this. Oh, you're thinking of the Forgotten, where her kids disappear or whatever.
Yeah.
No, this is a vampire road movie. It's very much like Near Dark, or like Vampires, and it's got Simon Rex from, like I said, from Red Rocket, or it's got, and also Jonathan Skaich, who's the lead singer of The Wonders and That Thing You Do. he's the main vampire. He's really good, actually. This movie is a lot of fun. Like, it's actually a blast. So I had a lot of fun watching it, and I'm going to add it to my potential deep dives right now.
All right.
And that's all I've got.
So let's get to that deep dive. Who's picking this week?
I believe it's my turn again.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we are going to be watching Janosz Vitez, an English Johnny Corncob by Marcel Jankovic. It's a Hungarian animated film.
Oh.
78 minutes.
Beautiful. Kevin, you are my favorite person on this podcast. JR, you're done.
My movie minutes. Was 85.
Too many, bud. That's 7 more minutes. I'm loving it.
Johnny Corncob?
Johnny Corncob. Name?
By Marcel. Yep.
Can we all agree to call it Johnny Corncob?
Yeah, sure.
And not the Hungarian name that I won't be able to pronounce?
Janosz.
Sorry, Janosz Vitez.
Vitez, yeah, it's not hard.
Not that bad.
Okay. Have you seen any of these Marcel Jankovic films, Kevin, or is this a...
So, this will be a rewatch for me. I've seen this one and another one, Son of the White Mare, which I remember liking more than this one, but I'm going to watch them both, because they're both short, so...
Yeah. Definitely. I'm in, bud. This is great. Thank you for choosing a short film. This is wonderful. Two short films in a row?
Yes, indeed.
I actually have a Tragedy of Man in my watch list, which is not a short film.
Yeah, right. you're going to fuck us next time, aren't you?
No, I've never seen it. No, I'm
saying... No. I meant, like, next time you pick, you're like, thank you for these short films.
Yeah.
Oh. Here's my five-hour film.
He's going to choose, like, Decalogue, you know?
Decalogue. We're doing Satan Tango for the next one. No, I don't. I think I've got. I haven't really chosen the next film yet, but it won't be. I'll make sure it's shorter. Okay.
It's okay.
I won't. I don't even have any long ones on my list, dude. Honestly. I mean, there's a lot of weird movies that, like, I can't believe you guys haven't seen in my list. So maybe we'll do one of those. Anyway.
Did you guys see? Did you guys add Entrapment to your list?
No.
No, I won't. I don't want to see Entrapment again.
That one's almost 2 hours. So
I'm sure it's terrible, dude. Who directed Entrapment? I'm sure it's really bad.
John Amiel, which is
John Amiel. Yeah.
Mm. Why do I recognize that?
He did.
Did something.
Copycat. Oh, and The Man Who Knew Too Little. I didn't know that.
There we go. Mm. There it is.
I know him from Copycat.
Mm.
That's all he's done.
Sorry, I'm just going to keep referencing the Cinematrix game that we play without talking about what I'm referencing. Anyway, all right,
cool. Well, we'll be watching. Johnny Korkob's got to be on YouTube, right?
It's on Canopy for sure.
Oh, it's on Canopy,
and it might also be on YouTube.
Okay, cool. Well, for next time, we'll be watching Johnny Korkob, which does not appear to be on YouTube. And until then, thanks for listening. You know, I don't even care. Just write to us, filmyakpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.